where the first three chapters describe the discussion between the sages of Naimisharanya and Suta Goswami about six questions. So next three chapters discuss the history of the appearance of Srimad Bhagavatam, where Vyasadeva, after compiling so many Vedic literatures, he was despondent, and Narada Muni came and gave him teachings of devotional service and inspired Vyasadeva to compile Srimad Bhagavatam by narrating his own personal life, how practicing Bhakti Yoga and how the association of devotees helped him advance in devotional service, helped him attain the position as Narada Muni, although he was the son of a maid servant. So all that he mentioned till the end of 6th chapter. So he concluded the 6th chapter with this beautiful verse that etad hi atur cittanam matra sparshe chayamuhu bhavasindhu plavo drishto haricharyana varnanam. So people are suffering in this material world mainly because they are constantly trying to bring their senses in contact with sense objects, and they don't get happiness because of that. So they are suffering in this material world. The only solution for all sufferings in this material world is Haricharya Anuvarnanam, to describe the glories of Lord Hari. And he inspired him to compile Vedic literatures. Now in the beginning of the 7th chapter, Shaunaka Rishi is asking Suta Goswami. Shaunaka Uvacha,
Shaunaka Uvacha,
Nirgate Narade Suta,
Nirgate Narade Suta,
Bhagavan Badarayana,
Bhagavan Badarayana,
Shrutavam Stadabhipretam,
Shrutavam Stadabhipretam,
Tatah Kim Akarod Vibhu,
Tatah Kim Akarod Vibhu.
Rishi Shaunaka asked, O Suta, the great and transcendentally powerful Vyasadeva, what can we do to Sri Narada? So after Narada's Upasha, what did Vyasadeva do?
So in this chapter, variety of contents are there. The first 11 verses describe what Vyasadeva has done after Narada Muni departed. So we have just seen the contents of this chapter briefly. So what Vyasadeva has done after Narada Muni departed, his meditation and vision, and some glories of Bhagavatam are also mentioned. After that, Sukata Goswami answers the second question of the sages. In the 4th chapter, the sages asked him 3 questions. One question was about the history of Bhagavatam. Where did Vyasadeva get inspiration to compile this Bhagavatam? So second question was about Parikshit Maharaj. What are his birth activities, and why did he renounce everything? So like that, there are some questions related to Parikshit Maharaj. And third question is about Sukadeva Goswami. So how was he perceived when he went to Hastinapur, and how did the meeting between Parikshit and Sukadeva Goswami take place? So like that, there are questions asked by sages of Naimisharanya in the beginning of the 4th chapter. So far, Suta Goswami has answered this first question, history of Bhagavatam. How did Vyasadeva get inspiration to compile Bhagavatam? And that answer continues till the end of the 11th verse of this chapter. So after that, he will begin the answering next question about birth and activities of Parikshit Maharaj. Now we are in the first verse. First verse, Suta Goswami asked, Shaunaka Rishi asked, Nirgate Narade Suta Bhagavan Badarayanaha Shrutavamstad Abhipriyatam Tatah Kim Akarod Vibhuhu. After Vyasadeva has heard a lot from Narada Muni, what did he do? So hearing is one part. What we do after hearing is another part. That's most exciting and most important. So hearing is one thing. We need to act based on what we are hearing. How do we apply the knowledge that we have acquired from hearing? So what did he do? He has heard that, heard from Narada Muni that you should compile Srimad Bhagavatam. You should repeatedly glorify the Lord. You should sufficiently glorify the Lord. Not just placing Lord's glories here and there. Make Krishna's glories as the prominent subject matter of this book, Bhagavatam. That was the instruction Vyasadeva has received. Now, he will execute that instruction in the first few verses. Next, second verse. Suta Goswami is beginning to answer. Suta
uvacha. Suta uvacha.
Brahmanadhyam sarasvatyam.
Brahmanadhyam sarasvatyam.
Ashramah paschimetate.
Ashramah paschimetate.
Shamya prasa iti prokta.
Shamya prasa iti prokta.
Rishinam satravardhana.
Rishinam satravardhana.
Shri Suta said, on the western bank of river Saraswati, which is intimately related with the Vedas, there is a cottage for meditation as Samya Prasha, which enlivens the transcendental activities of the sages.
So, Brahmadhyam, Sarasvadhyam. So, Brahmadhyam means on the bank of the river. This is called, this is not just Nadhyam, Brahmanadhyam. That river which is related to the Vedas, Brahmanas, saints and the Lord, that's why it is called Brahmanadhyam, very holy river. It's not like any other river. So, on that bank, Vyasadeva sat to compile, to meditate on the Supreme Lord. So, he, second line says, Ashramah Paschime Tate. He has, he was sitting at his ashram. So, Prabhupada focuses on the word ashram. He says, for spiritual advancement of knowledge, a suitable place and atmosphere are definitely required. What is that suitable place? Ashrama. It is Varanashrama. So, there are four ashramas, Brahmachari ashram, Grihastha ashram, then Vanaprastha ashram and Sannyasi ashram. So, these are all called ashramas. It's not that the place where Brahmacharis live, that is only called ashram. The place where Sannyasis live, that is only ashram. But the place where householders live, that also is supposed to be an ashram. That is called Grihastha ashram. If people who are not, who are living at a place are not practicing Krishna consciousness in household life, that place cannot be called Grihastha ashram, it is Grihamedhi, where Krishna is not center. In a place where spiritual culture is the center, Krishna's worship and Krishna's seva is center, that is called ashram. So, Prabhupada mentions that. As an ashram is a place where spiritual culture is always foremost. Spiritual culture is foremost, means sound vibration of Krishna should be there, Krishna katha should be there, Krishna seva should be there. That qualifies one as ashram, a place as ashram. So, if in a place where these spiritual activities are not prominent, although apparently some celibates are living there, that cannot be called as ashram. Right? So, Prabhupada continues in this purport. This means that spiritual culture is the common factor for all. Common factor. The Brahmacharis, the Grihasthas, the Vanaprasthas and the Sannyasis all belong to the same mission of life, namely realization of the Supreme Lord. So, whichever may be the ashram, the objective of that ashram is spiritual realization, realizing Lord. The difference is a matter of formality and the strength of renunciation. Now, Brahmacharis and Sannyasis are renunciants. So, they are renunciants internally and externally also. But Grihasthas, they are renunciants internally. Their internal renunciation need not manifest externally. Externally, they may be living with the wife, children and so much of household paraphernalia. Externally, it may seem that they are not renunciants. But internally, they are supposed to carry the mood of renunciation. Then only they will be called as ashramavasis. Otherwise, that's a grihamedhi place. It's not grihastha ashram. So, ashram is basically everyone is very eager and enthusiastic to hear and chant about Krishna. They are eager to serve Krishna. They are eager to inspire others in serving Krishna. That is supposed to be an ashram. The body, the mind, the words of an ashram residents are supposed to be the property of Guru. They are supposed to not do anything except Krishna service and Guru service. Then only they are called ashram residents. So, Prabhupada brings out these wonderful aspects, right? Spiritual culture is common factor for all. Spiritual culture, wherever it is there, prominent, that is called ashram. So, one quote of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He says, matha, ashram is matha, and those who are staying in matha and not practicing spiritual culture, not keeping Krishna in the center, they are called Mathamedhis. Just like Grihamedhis are there, they are Mathamedhis. He says that the purpose of ashram is not to convert funds into urine and stool. So that is not the purpose of a mat. He says, we have to practice spiritual culture. That's what he says. The difference is, it is only formality, it's about the strength of renunciation. Now, if you remember in the first canto, 5th chapter, 13th verse, what did Narada Muni tell Vyasadeva? He said, you should remember the Lord's pastimes continually in Samadhi. You can go back to 1.5.13. 1.5.13. Aho, atho, mahabhaga bhavan amoghadruk, sitishravaha, satyarato, dhrutavrataha, urukramasyakhila bandhamukta, ye samadhina, samadhina, anushrama tadvicheshtitam. So, in trance, you meditate upon the glorious qualities of Vishnu, of Krishna. That was the instruction given by Narada Muni. Now, in the third verse of this chapter, our Vyasadev meditates on the Lord. Tasmin sva ashrame vyaso,
tasmin sva ashrame vyaso,
badari shanda mandite,
badari shanda mandite,
asinopa apasprishya,
asinopa apasprishya,
pranidadhyo manasvayam,
pranidadhyo manasvayam.
That place, Vyasadev, was surrounded by very trees, set down to meditate.
So, Vyasadeva sat there to meditate upon the Lord. So, what did Vyasadeva see in his meditation? That is the subject matter of next couple of verses. Fourth verse. Bhakti yogena manasim,
bhakti yogena manasim,
samyak pranihite male,
samyak pranihite male,
apashyat purusham purnam,
apashyat purusham purnam,
mayam chatadapashrayam,
mayam chatadapashrayam.
Thus it is his mind, perfectly leading to by intimating to himself without imitating of materialism. And thus he saw that the new society of Godhead around the room, external of him, which was
Bhakti yogena manasi, samyak. Samyak means perfectly. So, samyak pranihite amale. So, without any contamination, without any deviation, without any distraction, in pure attitude of devotional service, Vyasadev was meditating on Krishna in Bhakti Yoga. Apashyat Purusham Purnam. What did he see in his meditation? Purusham Purnam, the complete Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purushai, Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. So, not only did he see Krishna, Purusham Purnam, that indicates he saw Krishna in his complete sense, means he saw Krishna along with his all his expansions. He saw Gunavataras, he saw Leelavataras, he saw Purushavataras, he saw all his energies, he saw his internal potency. The complete personality of Godhead he was able to see in his meditation. Purusham Purnam. Then Mayam cha tadapashrayam. Mayam cha means he also saw the external energy of Krishna. Maya means illusory energy of Krishna. So that Purusham Purnam, that word Purnam indicates he saw the Supreme Lord with his chit shakti. The word Mayam indicates he saw Krishna's external energy also. Chit shakti is there, Maya shakti is there. He saw both. He saw the Lord and his chit shakti and his Maya shakti. So, means Purusham Purnam. Purnam means full, complete, round. That something is, which is complete circle, complete whole, that is called Purnam. So, on a Purnima day, moon is full, full circle, right? So, by seeing a full circle, means a full moon, it's as good as seeing all the other phases of moon. Ashtami, Navami, Dashami, Ekadashi, Dvadasi, all these are included within a Purnami moon. Similarly, when you see Krishna, all his expansions are included. He saw Krishna only, he didn't see Ram. And he wrote about Ram in the 9th canto, 10th and 11th chapters. He saw Krishna only, he didn't see Varaha. He wrote about Varaha in the 3rd canto, 17, 18, 19 chapters and 13th chapter also. He saw Krishna only, he didn't see so and so incarnation, but that was described, not like that. When you see Krishna, everything is included. Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. We have elaborately discussed in the first canto, 3rd chapter. He saw everything. Purusham Purnam. And this Purnam is sometimes read as Purvam also. Purvam means earlier, pehle. So what was that? Lord was existing earlier also. Earlier means what? Earlier to the manifestation of this cosmos. Ahamevasam evagre. So Krishna was existing before the creation of this world also. He saw that Supreme Lord who is ever existent even before the creation of this material world also. That's another reading of this verse. Apashyat Purusham Purnam Mayam cha tadapashrayam. So that is about Purusham Purnam Mayam cha tadapashrayam. That's an important word. He also saw the material energy. He has to meditate on Krishna. And yes, we will discuss this point, Maya. Why he saw Maya also along with Purusha, that we will discuss in the next verse. Before that, we will discuss Prabhupada's purport. So, perfect vision of the absolute truth is possible only by the linking process of devotional service. So, Prabhupada focuses on this word, Bhakti Yogena Manasi. How can he saw Purusha? Apashyat Purusham Purnam. How could he see Purusha? Apashyat means seeing. Who? Purusha. How can one see Purusha? Only by Bhakti Yoga. Bhakti Yogena Manasi. Samyak, not spaced out. Perfectly focusing on Krishna in the mood of Bhakti Yoga. Then he will be able to see Purusha. So, Apashyat Purusham Purnam. So, Prabhupada further writes, when you realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Personality Bhagavan, that includes the realization of other substantial realizations also. Bhagavan is there. Then Brahman, Paramatma are also there. You need not separately realize Brahman and Paramatma. So imperfect realization is to realize only Brahman. Imperfect realization is only to realize Paramatma. Because what is Brahman? Just the effulgence of the Lord. You don't know the person. You know only his kanti, effulgence. That is not complete. And you don't know the person. You know his partial representation as Paramatma. That is also not complete. But if you know the person, effulgence is right there. His partial expansions are included in him. They are coming from him only. So, Bhagavan realization is supreme. Apashyat Purusham Purnam. Next, in the next page, Prabhupada writes, the Supreme Person has manifold energies, out of which the internal, external and marginal energies are specifically prominent. So, Lord has three kinds of energies. So, Lord's energies could be categorized in different ways. So, internal, external and marginal. So, it is said that the internal potency is superior to external potency and marginal potency is somewhere in the middle. That marginal potency of the Lord can sometimes come under the influence of internal potency, can sometimes come under the influence of external potency. It is like that. So the internal energy is there along with the absolute person as the moonlight. Now you see this moonlight is there. Moon is there. Internal energy of the Lord is compared to moonshine. So, these are an analogy of Lord's energies. So, internal energy of the Lord is compared to moonshine because moonshine gives bliss. And external energy of the Lord or Bahiranga Shakti of the Lord is compared to a cloud around. When this cloud goes on the moon, you can't see the moon. Means that gives misery. So, cloud blocks you from the vision of the moon. And moonshine will enhance your experience of seeing the moon. So, Antaranga Shakti will give bliss to the person, to the, you know, Jiva. And Bahiranga Shakti, like a cloud, it blocks the vision of the Supreme Lord from being able to be seen by the Jiva. Right? It gives misery. It gives trouble. So, that is the difference between the Antaranga Shakti and Bahiranga Shakti. Prabhupada gives this wonderful analogy. Now, fifth verse. In the fourth verse, Vyasadeva, it is mentioned that Vyasadeva has seen the Supreme Lord and the external energy, right? And Supreme Lord means it includes all his other potencies also. I'll take. So fifth verse. You can compare it to darkness also. When the cloud is covering the sun, covering the moon. There is darkness created also. Darkness also can be compared to, it's an analogy basically.
So, Because
sunshine
is there within the moon. So,
Antaranga
Shakti is there withdrawn, right?
And
the external energy is separated actually.
So, now analogy when it is given, it can be made into different comparisons, right? So, darkness is definitely the absence of moonshine. And you can call that darkness also as Maya. And cloud is that energy of sun only, it is covering the sun. That also can be compared to Maya. Right. Analogy. Yes, sir. Anyways, we have taken. You can tell me.
So, just
So, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that when he is describing his external energy, he says, Bhumirapo analovayo bhinna prakriti rashtaka. Bhumirapo analovayo khammano buddhi revacha ahankara iti yamya bhinna prakriti. It is my separated energy. That is also Lord's energy, but it got separated from the Lord. External energy. But when he is describing the marginal potency, mamaivamsho jivaloke jivabhuta sanatana. He is my amsha. Now, Prabhupada often gives this example of fire. Now, fire has a spark. That spark also has heat and light. Just like you just mentioned, soul is also Sachidananda, Supreme Lord is also Sachidananda. But the spark has limited capacity of heat and light. So, if it gets disconnected from the fire, it may just merge into the darkness, right? It may not exist for long. It's Sachidananda, his heat and fire cannot, heat and light cannot exist for long time. So, that is how the marginal energy is compared, that it can come under the influence of external energy, it can come under the influence of internal energy also. Because when we say marginal potency, the comparison is given that he can either come under the influence of this energy or that energy. Right? That's why it's called marginal energy.
That is a soul who is in a conditioned state, right?
Coming under the influence of external energy is conditioned state. Internal energy is liberated state. So natural state.
Those who are siddha spiritual world, they fall into the internal potency of
the world, right? Now things are getting clear. Internal potency means Lord Shaktis. Now in the Chaitanya Charitamrita Adilila, in the first 7 chapters, there is a long description about Lord's energies. I think now it's little beyond the scope of this chapter. So there, Prabhupada has Shakti Tattvas, internal energies, external energies. Now we are seeing about Jivas. There are Lord's personal expansions, right? When we say, Ete Chamsa Kalapamsa Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam, Amsha Kalaha. So Lord's expansions are, what to say, incarnations are also Amshas. We are also Amshas. But this is Jiva Tattva, that is Vishnu Tattva. You can't say when Jiva Tattva is under the influence of internal potency, that becomes Vishnu Tattva. Vishnu Tattva is different. Jiva Tattva is different. But Jiva Tattva has the tendency to either come under the influence of internal or external potency. So it cannot go into the internal potency. Jiva Tattva cannot become internal potency. That's why it is marginal. Marginal, when it is under the influence of internal potency, it cannot be called internal potency. Marginal, when it is under the influence of external potency, it cannot be called external potency. It retains its spiritual nature, but it is minute in its capacity, quality, minute in its quantity, like that. We can discuss more about this, a very broad subject matter. Fifth.
Yaya sammohito jiva
Atmanam trigunatmakam
Paropi manutenartham
Tatkritam chabhipadyate
Due to this external energy, the living entity, all those transcendental to the three modes of the nature, thinks of himself as a material body and thus undergoes the reactions of material
Earlier he saw the Lord and Maya. Now he is seeing the disease of conditioned living entity. Yaya sammohito jiva. He began with Purusha and then Maya. And that jiva who is coming under the influence of Maya. Yaya sammohito jiva atmanam trigunatmakam. So this Maya is what? Characterized by three qualities. Atmanam trigunatmakam. goodness, passion and ignorance. Three modes are there. They are three modes of material nature, prakriti. Then parvapi manute anartham tatkritam chabhipadyate. So Vyasadeva, what he has seen is, he has seen the Supreme Lord Purusha, he has seen Maya, external energy, and he has also seen Jiva being influenced by Maya, misidentifying himself as a product of material energy. That is the fifth verse. Jiva's misidentification he has seen. He has seen the problem, he has seen the disease. In the next verse, he will see the solution, medicine for this disease. Now the living being is by constitution transcendental to material encasement, but he is now imprisoned by the external energy, and therefore he thinks himself one of the material products. And due to this unholy contact, the pure spiritual entity suffers material miseries under the modes of material nature. See, just like Prabhupada says, one beautiful analogy that comes in the third canto. For example, somebody sees his head cut off. How can someone see his own head cut off? If his head is cut off, how can he see himself? But he can see if it is in a dream. Similarly, how can there be a contact with the pure spiritual living entity with material energy? Actually, it cannot be. How can the matter mix with spirit? It is not possible. But it is possible in a dream. That it is possible due to misidentification. Dream is what? In a dream, one misidentifies himself as something else. Similarly, this material world, like a dreamy state of the pure spirit soul, that he is misidentifying himself with this material body. That is how it exists. That also Vyasadeva has seen. So further Prabhupada says, that this cannot be, because the living entity has his own way of thinking in his original unconditional state. In conditional state, he thinks himself as a product of matter or many other things. But in unconditional state, he will think himself as servant of Krishna. Now, Prabhupada gives an analogy of father and son. An affectionate father does not like his children to be chastised by another agent. But yet he puts his disobedient children under the custody of a severe man, just to bring them to order. This also we have discussed earlier, that a mother is there, mother doesn't want the child to cook himself and then eat, that we have seen, discussed. So mother-child analogy Prabhupada gives. And here he is giving father-son analogy he is giving. So student, child is not studying properly, father wants him to study properly, what he will do? He will put the child under the guidance of a strict tuition teacher. Tuition teacher becomes very strict. You should study like this. So discipline. So in front of father, the child is not getting discipline. In front of tuition teacher, he will become more disciplined. So father doesn't want his son to undergo all the trouble. He wants him to voluntarily study nicely and be well behaved. But because he is mischievous, he is putting under his guidance. Similarly, Lord wants all the souls to be with him, serve him and enjoy him in his company, enjoy with him in his company. But because the soul is having a rebellious mentality, he is putting him under the guidance of this material energy, which is like a strict tuition teacher. Okay. So how do we come out of this under the influence of this material energy? Prabhupada gives surrendering process. Surrendering process is the remedial measure for getting relief from the bewildering base of the illusory energy. Further, Prabhupada says, there are two ways in which the Lord reclaims these rebellious souls. This whole material world is simply a reclaiming program of the Lord. What is the mission of the Lord in this material creation? Reclaiming the conditioned souls, reclaiming the rebellious souls. So, the conditioned souls are being reclaimed by the Lord both ways. One, namely by the process of punishment by the external energy, and by himself as the spiritual master within and without. In two ways he reclaims. One, he punishes the soul through the medium of external energy and says that this is not a place for you to live. You cannot enjoy here. Even you can't do your eating, sleeping, eating, depending also properly. Right? This is a horrible place. You should get out of it. He gives realizations through material energy. And he also gives him teachings through guru. internally and externally, as super soul and as guru.
So,
therefore, it is sheer imagination that Supreme Lord is illusioned by the. Okay, Prabhupada says that only the Lord, only the Jiva gets illusioned like this. Only Jiva misidentifies himself as matter, but Lord doesn't. That means Jiva and Lord are different. That is how Prabhupada ends in that purport. So further he says that Lord is the controller of illusory energy. One thing is, he doesn't come under the influence of illusory energy. Second is, he controls it also. Maya dhyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam. So living entity is neither the controller of the illusory energy, nor is he has the ability not to come under its influence also. He is weak in both ways. But Lord is controlling, he doesn't come under control also. So, how does one come out of this control of illusory energy? By reviving one's lost relationship with the Lord. Every soul has a relationship with Krishna. One has to revive that relationship by practicing devotional service. That is the solution. That is how Prabhupada concludes the purport. Now, question is, answer to this question we have already discussed to some extent. So, why did Vyasadeva see Maya? He has seen the Lord. Right? Apashyam Purusham Purnam Mayam Cha Tadapashriyam. Fourth canto, fourth verses. So, he saw the Lord, but why did he see Maya? So, it is justifiable that Vyasadeva has seen the Lord. To describe the sweetness of the Lord, his pastimes, his qualities, his form, and many other things related to the Lord, one can see the Lord. That is the instruction given to Vyasadeva, right? You meditate on the Lord and glorify him repeatedly and sufficiently. That is the instruction. But why he has to see Maya also, external energy also? So, in the next verse, Vyasadeva, next verse means this fifth verse, Vyasadeva has seen Jiva being misidentifying, Jiva misidentifying with Maya. So, how can the Jiva afflicted by the material disease naturally taste the sweetness which is necessary for beginning to learn Bhagavatam? Means, if he describes only the Lord and his pastimes, paraphernalia, name, fame, etc., a diseased person, Jiva, how can he relate with it? How can a jaundiced person taste the sweetness of sugarcane juice? If Vyasadeva is in his own world describing Krishna only repeatedly and doesn't make it relevant and relatable with the Jiva, then Jiva cannot access it. So he has seen Maya also. He also has seen Jiva, Jiva's misidentification with Maya also. Means he has seen the disease, right? Without analyzing, diagnosing the disease, how can the prescription cannot be effective? No prescription for cure without first seeing the disease. So he has seen Maya. He has seen how Maya is entrapping the living entity, and then he has written Bhagavatam with sufficient description of Lord's energy, external energy also, and Jiva's suffering with that external energy also, and then he gave the solution also, describing Krishna's pastimes. One should not think that 10th canto is there, pure Krishna Katha, that only is ecstatic. 2nd canto is there, how this material world is created. And 5th canto is there, what is the geographical location of different planets in this universe. And 11th canto, so many other things are there, and so many types of Vedic processes are there. 3rd canto, Kapila's teachings are there, lot of Sankhya is there. So all these, one should not think that they are any lesser topics. Unless one understands that and appreciates that and acknowledges his position, fallen position in this material world, how can he actually understand the topics of Krishna? Sukadeva Goswami says, actually, these creation pastimes in 2nd canto and the universe, cosmology in 5th canto, they are easier topics compared to 10th canto topics of Krishna, Damodar Leela and all that. These are easier. If you can't understand this only, how will you understand that? That's what Vyasadeva says in 5th canto, one verse. Recently, I was working on Subhadini and I was paraphrasing this point. So, understanding about Lord's material energy is also important. It is as important as understanding Lord's activities. In fact, it is more important and more relevant for the conditioned soul. First, understand you are diseased, then you can take the medicine. If you don't realize that I am diseased, there will be no impetus to take the medicine. So that's why he gave medicine also, he diagnosed the disease also, so and he described the disease also. Third canto, you see last three chapters. Recently, Gauranga Prabhu must have elaborated in the third canto sessions. Third canto 30, 31, 32. Adverse fruitive activities, the entanglement of jiva in this material world. So Kapila describes such a horrible description, right? There is near-death experience, death experience, post-death experience, hellish experience, birth experience, post-birth experience, all these are described by Kapil Dev. Why they have to find a place in Bhagavatam? They are very relevant because disease, the diseased condition is very nicely analyzed by Vyasadeva. Next, remedy. Sixth and seventh verses are remedy measures.
Anarthopashamam sakshad, anarthopashamam sakshad,
bhakti yoga madhokshaje,
bhakti yoga madhokshaje,
lokasya janato vidvams,
lokasya janato vidvams,
chakre satvata samhitam,
chakre satvata samhitam.
So make it misery, okay, then you can get it. And directly you get by linking process of devotion. So the mass of people don't know this, and therefore the learned that they compile this radical, which is invasion in
Anartha upashamam saksha bhakti yoga madhokshaji. Anartha means unwanted thing. It has no meaning, it has no purpose. It is unnecessarily there. What is there? This conditioned state. So anartha upashamam sakshat. How can that upashama happen? Upashama means pacification, right? Subduing. How can unwanted thing, how can this miserable condition be subdued? Bhakti yogam adhokshaje. There is no other process that can actually mitigate the miseries of the living entity, conditioned living entity. Only bhakti yoga can mitigate. There could be so many other processes. No, none of them are as effective as bhakti yoga. Anartha upasamam sakshat bhakti yogam adhokshaje. Lokasya ajanato. People don't know this. People don't know this simple solution that I just have to hear, chant about Krishna and I will go back to the spiritual world, leaving this horrible material world. That point people don't know. Lokasya ajanato vidvam chakre satvata samhitam. That is why he has compiled Bhagavatam. To make people that only bhakti yoga will reconnect you with Krishna. You are connected with Krishna, you have forgotten that connection. By performing bhakti yoga, you will be reconnected with him. You don't know that? I am writing this Bhagavatam to make you know that. That is the purpose of Vyasadeva. To glorify Krishna, to inform conditioned soul about his fallen situation in this material world, and to give him the process to come out of it, which is bhakti yoga. That is the purpose of Bhagavatam. So, actually our heart is not free from disease to enjoy. That's why we don't have sufficient desire to go back to Godhead. So when will one develop the desire to go back to Godhead? If that heart is free from this enjoying propensity. And to the degree we cultivate the desire to serve Guru and Krishna, to that degree one will be freed from desires for sense gratification. And to that degree he will develop desires to go back to Godhead. Problem is what? We are suffering in this material world thinking that it is enjoyment. Solution is what? Give up this world and go back to spiritual world. How will the process happen? By performing bhakti yoga. That involves following the instructions of Guru and Krishna. To that extent we are eager to follow the instructions of Guru and Krishna, to that extent our desire to enjoy here and our desire to go there will improve. Our desire to detach ourselves from this and desire to go back there will improve. Once you get detached there, attached there. That will happen by Guru's grace and Krishna's grace. That other day we discussed this example of ocean ripples. You remember that? Our desires for sense gratification are like ripples on a river. They will never stop. But the river, when it meets the oceanic tides will overwhelm the insignificant ripples on the river, and those ripples will just they become insignificant. Similarly, our desires for sense gratification will become insignificant, will vanquish if we dovetail our desires to assist the plans of Guru. That is the process for mitigation of material desires. So, remedy is Bhakti Yoga. Prabhupada writes in this purport, revival of the dormant affection or love of Godhead does not depend on the mechanical system of hearing and chanting. Now, hearing and chanting is the solution. Should I just do it mechanically? No, Prabhupada says, but it solely and wholly depends on the causeless mercy of the Lord. If I just sit and hear for 10 hours or 20 hours, will I go back to Godhead? Lord also has to show some mercy. He writes in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Kaviraj Goswami writes, Bahujanma kare yadi shravana kirtan. What is the next line? Tabutana paye Krishna premadhan. So one may mechanically do this process, right? Along with offense and so many other things. The quantity may be there. If the quality is not there, if the attitude is not proper, then it's not effective. So, and also, if one's attitude is proper, it will attract Lord's mercy. Then this process will be effective. So, process along with attitude will inspire the Lord to be merciful. So, what attracts the Lord is not the quantity, not the magnitude of our efforts, but the attitude of our efforts. So, attitude will attract mercy. Magnitude need not attract mercy. And if we have attitude, magnitude will automatically increase over a period of time. Such mitigation of material affection does not wait for development of transcendental knowledge. Rather, knowledge is dependent on devotional service for the ultimate realization of the Supreme Truth. So, it's not that one has to endeavor to cultivate knowledge and all that. Next verse, 7th verse. Yasyam vai shruyamanayam Krishne parama purushe
Bhakti
utpadyate pumsah
Shokamoha
bhayabaham. Here he says Yasyam vai shruyamanayam. Earlier verse he said Chakre Satvata Samhitam. So why Vyasadeva has compiled this Srimad Bhagavatam? To explain Bhakti Yoga, to mitigate the sufferings of people. And if you hear that Bhagavatam which is compiled for this purpose, what will happen? Krishne parama purushe bhaktir utpadyate. Bhaktir utpadyate means a feeling of devotional service will be invoked in the heart of Pumse Jivas. Towards whom? Krishne, Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, parama purushe, his original personality of Godhead. So, bhakti is to be done towards Krishna, right? He is the object of our devotional service. And Krishna parama purushe bhaktir, that word bhaktir actually indicates prema. Chakravarti says. So, bhaktir utpadyate pumsa. And this verse reconfirms what we have learned earlier also. Sajyo hrudi avarudhyate trakrutubhir susrushubhi takshana dharma projita 1.1.2. There also we have seen. If one very faithfully and carefully hears Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord will be captivated in his heart. And Lord will be happy to be there, to be captivated in devotee's heart. So, Lord will immediately manifest there. So, bhakti rutpajyate pumsa. Because by hearing, he develops prema. And because of that prema, Lord manifests in his heart. All this we have discussed in first chapter. Same thing is mentioned here also. Bhakti rutpajyate pumsa. Bhakti towards Krishna will appear. And the shoka, moha, bhaya, apaha, they will automatically be vanquished. So, the shoka, moha, bhaya, apaha means vanquishing of one's lamentation, illusion and fear is not the end product of hearing Bhagavatam. It's a byproduct of hearing Bhagavatam. It is not the ultimate purpose for which Bhagavatam is written. Ultimate purpose is bhakti ritpadyate, Krishna parama pura. So, that love towards Krishna should develop. So, Bhagavatam will not only mitigate the miseries of suffering conditioned souls, it will also enable the reader to develop love for Krishna. So, that is explained here. And bhakti means prema here. That Chakravarti said. So, simply by hearing Bhagavatam produces prema. Right? And what to speak of engaging others in hearing it? There will be greater advantage. And what to speak of speaking Bhagavatam? that will have even more greater effect. What to speak of engaging others in speaking Bhagavatam, that will have even more effect. Right? Hearing gives prema, and making others hear will have greater benefit, and speaking will have even greater benefit, and engaging others in speaking will have even better benefit. So that is how gradation. Engaging others. This is how Chakravarti Vyasa says. So Sadhyo Hrudi, the Lord is captivated or captured in the heart of a devotee, even in the stage of sadhana bhakti also. So destruction of samsara is just an unsought result by devotees. Devotees don't so much seek for destruction of samsara. So many prayers we have seen in the fourth canto and many other cantos that they never asked for destruction of the samsara. Mama janmani janmani ishvare bhavata bhakti rahituki tvai. Mama janmani janmani ishvare means I don't want any stopping of this birth and death cycle. I don't pray for that. I just want love for you. And if you want me to continue here, I can continue. No problem. That's what Mahaprabhu says, and so many other devotees in Bhagavatam also say that. Now, purport. There are various senses of which the ear is most effective. Prabhupada says, if one is sleeping, he cannot protect himself from his hands. Only ears will protect him. So, with hands one can protect him when he is awake. But the one organ which is always active is ear. The importance of hearing is mentioned here in connection with attaining highest perfection of life. So, that hearing, Isyamai Shruyamanayam, means hearing Bhagavatam will bhakti rutpadyate. Hearing is connected to giving you the ultimate benefit of life, love of Krishna. So, this one organ can give love of Krishna. That's what Prabhupada is once again reminding. The ultimate result of devotional service is to develop genuine love for the Supreme Lord. There is love in this world, and that love is the only word that can be properly used to indicate relationship between the Lord and the living entity. So love generally means what? A man and a woman love each other. A man and man are loving each other, that's not very exciting. That looks little like a children. So somebody may say like that. So when man and woman are loving each other, so that's little, that makes sense. Love is a word which is often used in relation with a man and woman. Now when we say love for Krishna, I am a man, how can I have love for Krishna? So Prabhupada addresses that in this purport. Every living entity belongs to Lord's energy. Right? They are Prakriti. Living entities are Prakriti of the Lord. Lord is the Purusha. So between whom love will exist? Between Purusha and Prakriti. So Purusha and Prakriti only can love each other. So there could be love between Prakriti and Prakriti, right? But the higher understanding than that is love between Purusha and Prakriti. So Prabhupada says that love is the only word that can be properly used to indicate the relation between Krishna and living entities. So living entities mentioned here as Prakriti. Prakriti is feminine object. Parama Purusha is the supreme male personality. There can be love between them. So loving devotional service to the Lord begins with hearing. And that love begins with Yasyam Vai Sruyamanaya. One has to hear. Then bhakti utpadyate or prema utpadyate. So Prabhupada also mentions that politicians, peace conferences cannot bring about peace in the society. One has to understand Bhoktaram Yignatapasam Sarvaloka Maheswaram Suhridam Sarvabhutana Gnatvamam Shanti Mrichati. So one has to reach the stage of re-establishing one's lost relationship with Krishna. Then there will be real peace. And how will that happen? By hearing Bhagavatam. So the conclusion is that simply by hearing the Vedic literature Bhagavatam, one can have direct connection with the Lord Krishna. And thereby one can attain the highest perfection of life by transcending worldly miseries, illusion and fear. That is a summary to the last but one sentence of the purport. Next verse. Sasamhitam Bhagavatim Kritvanukramya Chatmajam Shukam Adhyapayam Asham Nivritti Nitaram Muni.
The great sage Vyasadeva, after compiling the Srimad Bhagavatam and revising it, taught it to his own son, Sri Sukhdev Goswami, who was already engaged in self-realization.
So Vyasadeva compiled this Bhagavatam that is mentioned in the 7th verse. After that, what he did do? He spoke it to his son, Sukadeva Goswami. Earlier he wrote it already, but after Nadamani's instructions, he revised it. That comes here only, Anukramya. Actually, Radhika Vallabhprabhu must have discussed it elaborately here. So, I will not touch on that subject. Everybody is familiar with it. So, Vyasadeva has already written Bhagavatam. After Narayana's instructions, he revised it. Chakravartipada also writes an elaborate commentary on that. So, although it is especially meant for the Paramahamsas or those who are totally engaged in self-realization, it works into the depths of the hearts of those who are worldly men. So, Bhagavatam is relevant for everyone. Even in the 5th chapter also, last verse is that only. So, Narada Muni instructed Vyasadeva to compile Bhagavatam in such a way that it mitigates the miseries of suffering people and it also satisfies the hankerings of learned people. Both. Right? Vidam Bhavutsitam 1.5. So, next verse. Shaunaka uvacha savaini vritti nirataha sarvato pekshako muni kasyava brahitam hitam atma rama samabhyastat.
Since Sukadeva Goswami was already on the path of self-realization and thus he was pleased with his own self, so why did he take the trouble to undergo the study of such a vast degree?
Nivritta nirataha. Then sarvatra upekshako. Then munihi. Then atma rama. These are the qualities of Sukadeva Goswami. He is already self-satisfied. He doesn't need anything beyond himself for his satisfaction. That is what atma rama means. And if he is already self-satisfied, what satisfaction did he derive from hearing Bhagavatam from his father? Right? So the answer to this question is next verse, most popular verse. Atma Ramascha Munayo
Atma Ramascha Munayo
Nirgrantha Apyurukrame
Nirgrantha Apyurukrame
Kurvantya Haitukim Bhaktim
Kurvantya Haitukim Bhaktim
Ittham Bhuta Guno Harihi
Ittham Bhuta Guno Harihi.
All different varieties of Atmaramas, those who take pleasure in Atma or spirit self.
All different varieties of Atmaramas means there are different varieties. There are 61 varieties of Atmaramas. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu describes this in Madhilila, Chaitanya Charitamrita. So, there is one full chapter dedicated to this one verse only. There we can learn more. Yes, bro.
Especially those established on the path of self-realization. Though freed from all kinds of material bondage, desire to render unalloyed devotional service unto the personality of Godhead. This means that the Lord possesses transcendental qualities and therefore can attract everyone, including liberated souls.
Atma Ramascha Munayo. There are Atma Ramas, self-satisfied people. Then Munayo, great sages are there. Nirgrantha means those who are Nirgrantha. Grantha means Hrithya Granthi. What is that? Bondage. Or bondage of false ego. Nirgrantha means one have detached themselves from this bondage of false ego. Even such people also take pleasure. Atma Rama Munayo Nirgrantha Api Urukrame Kurvanti Ahaitukim Bhakti. They will perform Ahaitukim Bhakti. Unmotivated devotional service, pure devotional service to the Lord. Why? Because Ittam Bhuta Guno Harihi. Ittam Bhuta means wonderful. Guna means qualities. Hari means Lord. So, Lord possesses such wonderful qualities that could even attract Atmaramas also. They are already satisfied, self-satisfied. But when they hear about Lord's qualities, they get attracted. My God, He is more very attractive. Even people who lost all excitement, who have no other reason for getting excited in this world, they also get excited when they hear Krishna Katha. Krishna's qualities. Such are the wonderful qualities of Krishna. So, this is a wonderful verse. So, Prabhupada gives several meanings for different limbs of this verse. And Prabhupada writes in the third page of this verse, therefore, unalloyed devotional service means service to the Lord without desire for above mentioned personal benefits. So, one may serve someone in return for so many other various material benefits, But unalloyed, ahayitukim bhakti means he has no other purpose. It should be causeless. Unalloyed devotional service of the Lord progresses in different stages. Then there are different stages. Adho Shraddha, Sadhu Sangha, Bhajana Kriya, all that proper mentions. And when one gets attached to Krishna, that attachment could be of different flavors, five rasas, that he explains in the next paragraph. Then the personal form of Krishna is so attractive that it comprehends all attraction, all bliss and all tastes. These attractions are so strong that no one wants to exchange them for material enjoyment, mystic powers and liberation. If one has the taste buds, then if he is given a tasty item, he doesn't want to leave that item. If one doesn't have taste buds only, then he cannot realize it. So all these Atmaramas and Munis and Nirgranthas, all these people, when they hear about qualities of Krishna, they immediately get attracted to it. Right? So that is mentioned. That is the glory of Lord's qualities. We have four Kumaras. They went to Vaikuntha. Just the fragrance emanating from the lotus feet of Krishna, Tulsi offered to Krishna, attracted them. Then we have Sukadeva Goswami. He was a monist earlier. Parinishthitopi nairgunya uttama shloka lilaya grihita cheta rajarshe akhyanam yadadhitavan. I was absorbed in my impersonal understanding or whatever. But what did Vyasadeva do? He went into the place where Sukadeva Goswami was sitting in that garden, and he engaged some of his followers to speak selected verses from Bhagavatam and make them recite in front of Sukadeva Goswami. Sukadeva Goswami heard those verses and he got attracted. Right? So Sukadeva Goswami got attracted by Lord's qualities and pastimes. Kumaras got attracted by his fragrance. Gopis got attracted by the form of Krishna. And Rukmini got attracted by hearing about various activities of Krishna from Narada Muni. So like that, so many categories of people, when they hear about Krishna, they just get attracted. Something of Krishna will be very attractive to him. They get connected with Krishna in any of these rasas. Yad yad dhyata urugaya vibhavayanti tattattvapuh pranayase sadanugrahaya. So Lord is so powerful that he can manifest a unique quality and unique form and unique activity to please one soul. How many souls are there? Unlimited souls are there. How many souls are there just in this room? Not just 20-30 people sitting here, there are so many insects and so many other things. Within this room only there could be hundreds and thousands of souls. And within this temple whole complex there could be even more number. Entire Mumbai you will find more. Like that, in India there are so many souls. And in this world there are so many souls, and there are so many planets within this universe, and there are millions of universes. Unlimited number of living entities are there. Krishna has unlimited capacity to manifest unique qualities and unique forms and unique activities to give pleasure to one soul. He has that unlimited extent to reciprocate, and we don't have even limited appetite also to accept that. Right? Accept that reciprocation of Krishna. Yadyad dhyata urugaya vibhavayanti. With one's great intelligence, one will meditate on so and so form of Krishna. Tat tat vapuh pranayase. In those forms only, pranayase, with great affection and love, Lord will manifest and reciprocate with the devotee. Right? Sad anugraha, with anugraha. So Lord has such wonderful qualities. So there could be more in this beautiful verse, but we will move ahead. Harer guna kshipta mate,
Harer guna kshipta mate,
Bhagavan Badarayani,
Bhagavan Badarayani,
Adhyagan Mahadakhyanam,
Adhyagan Mahadakhyanam,
Nityam Vishnu Janapriyah,
Nityam Vishnu Janapriyah.
Shri Shukdev Goswami, son of Shri Vyasadeva, was not only transcendentally powerful, he was also very dear to the devotees of the Lord. Thus he underwent the study of this great narration of Srimad Bhagavatam.
So, Harer Gunakshipta Matir Ittam Bhuta Guno Harihi. That's how the 10th verse ended. What is the next verse? Harer Guna Akshipta Matir. So, Sukadeva Goswami's consciousness got just caught up in Lord's qualities. So, Vyasadeva, he realized the sweetness of Krishna by hearing from Narada Muni. And Sukadeva Goswami realized the sweetness of Krishna even more than Vyasadeva after hearing from Vyasadeva. So he got so attracted to Krishna. and he was describing Krishna's qualities and activities and forms in such wonderful pleasure that Vyasadeva was also mesmerized. Vyasadeva and he, who inspired him? Narada Muni. Both of them were sitting in Sukadeva Goswami's class and then hearing, as if they are hearing Bhagavatam for the first time. That is how Sukadeva Goswami got attracted. Unless one gets attracted to a subject matter, he cannot describe that subject matter to others and then make an impact upon them. Sukadeva Goswami has assimilated this subject matter so much, got attracted to Krishna's qualities so much, that when he describes, even Vyasadeva gets mesmerized. Even Narada Muni gets mesmerized. Everybody gets mesmerized. Nigamakalpataror galitam phalam sukha mukhat amrutadrava samyutam. So when Sukadeva Goswami, you know, was biting parrot, biting this fruit of Bhagavatam, mature fruit of this Bhagavatam, it has become more tasty. So that is Harir Gunakshiptamatir. Then Bhagavan Vadarayana Adhyayan Mahadakhyanam Nityam Vishnu Janapriyaha. Now Vishnu Janapriyaha, we will see. We have discussed the first word, we will discuss the last word. Vishnu Janapriyaha means Sukadeva Goswami, because he got attracted to Lord's qualities so much, he became so dear to the Vaishnavas and Vaishnavas became so dear to him. So how does one cultivate relationships amongst Vaishnavas? By his relationship with Krishna. If he gets so connected with Krishna, if he cultivates his relationship with Krishna more and more, he intensifies his relationship with sound vibration and form of Krishna, that will make him attractive in the eyes of other Vaishnavas, and that consciousness will make him aware of the qualities of other Vaishnavas, and they get attached to him and he gets attached to them. So one of the important ways of cultivating Vaishnava relationships is to develop bonding with Bhagavata, to develop attraction for qualities of Krishna. See, Harir Gunakshiptamatir, last line is what? Vishnujanapriya. Vishnujanapriya means all Vishnujanas are dear to Sukadeva Goswami, and Sukadeva Goswami is dear to all Vishnujanas. Both meanings are there within that one word only. So Sukadeva Goswami was in continual trance in a lonely forest. Vyasadeva went and expertly made him hear Krishna's qualities. He just got attracted. Like that. Next, in this purport, Prabhupada writes, the transcendental qualities of the Lord are so attractive that Sukadeva Goswami became detached from being completely absorbed in impersonal Brahman and positively took up the personal activity of the Lord. Right? He left impersonal thing, he got into personal activity and qualities. So that is the answer to the first question of the sages. In the fourth chapter of Bhagavatam, all the sages asked one question: what is the history of Bhagavatam? Where did Vyasadeva get this inspiration to compile? How did he compile? Where did he compile? When did he compile? These are the questions, right? So that answer started from the middle of 4th chapter till the 11th verse of this chapter, 7th chapter. Now from the 12th verse onwards, he is answering the next question about Parikshit Maharaj. What are, describe the birth and activities of Parikshit Maharaj, and how did he renounce birth, activities, renunciation and death of Parikshit Maharaj. They wanted to know. So he has to begin with Parikshit Maharaj's birth. Now Sukadeva Goswami begins with the background, the events that are leading to Parikshit Maharaj's birth. So what happened before Parikshit Maharaj's birth? Before Parikshit Maharaj's birth, Pandavas retired. Pandavas did not retire. Pandavas were enthroned. Right before that, Kurukshetra war happened. And between this Kurukshetra war and then Pandavas taking into position, what happened? Ashwatthama killed the 5 sleeping sons of Pandavas. So he starts describing all these events, beginning from Ashwatthama killing the sleeping sons of Pandavas. After that, Ashwatthama was punished in a certain way. Then later, Kuntimarani offers prayers. Ashwatthama releases another Brahmastra to kill Parikshit Maharaj. Then that is in the 8th chapter. Then Kuntimarani offers prayers. Then Bhishma is delivered in the 9th chapter. 10th verse, 10th chapter, Krishna leaves from Hastinapur. 11th chapter, Krishna enters Dwarka. Then sages recollect, I think you were supposed to describe Parikshit Maharaj's birth. You began with Ashwatthama being punished and then went to Dwarka. Please come back to this topic. Then in 12th chapter, he describes the birth of Parikshit Maharaj. Okay. So now we are discussing certain events leading to Parikshit Maharaj's birth. Should we take a break now? Should we take break now? 5 minutes? 2:35, 2:40 we'll meet. Janma karma vilapanam, samstham cha pandu putranam, vakshe krishna kathodayam.
Sutta Goswami thus addressed the rishis headed by Shrava. Now I shall begin the transcendental narration of the Lord Shri Krishna and topics of the birth, activities and deliverance of King Parikshit, the sage amongst kings, as well as topics of the renunciation of the worldly order by the sons of Pandu.
So, Parikshito atha Rajarshir. Sanakrishi asked that question about the birth of Parikshit Maharaj, and Sutta Goswami is beginning that I will describe about the glorious activities of Parikshit, his birth, Janma, his activities, karma, vilapanam, vilapanam is deliverance, and samstham, his renunciation of the world, all this I will describe. Then samsthanam cha panduputranam. So before describing the activities of Parikshit Maharaj, Sutta Goswami describes the retirement of Pandavas. 15th chapter is retirement of Pandavas, 16th, 17th are the activities of Parikshit Maharaj. So all these are Krishna Katha. So when we are discussing about Vaishnavas, it is as good as Krishna Katha. Vaishnava Katha, Krishna Katha, both are equally powerful. So without Krishna, all the supplementary Puranas and Mahabharata are simply stories of historical facts. But with Krishna, they become transcendental. As long as Krishna is the center of a discussion, that discussion is worth participating in. If it's not connected with Krishna, at least it is not indirectly, at least not connected with Krishna, then it's not worth taking interest in by the Vaishnavas. So we will not read every verse, storyline. So we will move fast and discuss the most important aspects. Can someone loudly read next translation?
When the respective warriors of both camps, namely the Kauravas and the Pandavas, were killed on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and the dead warriors obtained their deserved destinations, and when the son of Dhritarashtra fell down lamenting, his spine broken, being beaten by the club of Bhimasena, the son of Dronacharya, Ashwatthama beheaded the 5 sleeping sons of Draupadi and delivered them as a prize to his master, foolishly thinking that he would be pleased. Duryodhan, however, disapproved of the heinous act, and he was not pleased in the least.
So, this is a story that begins at the end of Kurukshetra war, where Ashwatthama killed the 5 sleeping sons of Pandavas, and Draupadi was lamenting, and Ashwatthama presented this news, death news of the sleeping sons of Pandavas to this fellow Duryodhan, and Duryodhan was not pleased by 2 reasons. One is Ashwatthama did not kill the Pandavas, he killed their sons. He was not very happy with it. Second, he made the lineage also, the Kauravas lineage stopped there, right? Because the next generation was also killed. That was also not very happy news to Duryodhan. So he was not very pleased with it. Then 15th verse. Please read translation.
Draupadi, one of the 5 children of the Pandavas, after hearing of the massacre of her sons, began to cry in distress with eyes full of tears. Trying to pacify her in her great loss, Arjuna spoke to her thus.
So Draupadi was very morose. She was lamenting for her dead children. So Arjuna tried to pacify her. He is described as Kirita Mali. Arjuna is described in this word, in this verse, as Kirita Mali. Kirita Mali means one who has accepted so many kiritas, crowns. Or he has a mala in his kirita, garland in his crown. That's how Chakravarti explains. So see, what did he say in the 16th verse? We'll read.
Lady, when I present you with the head of that Brahman, after beheading him with the arrows, from my Gandiva bow. I shall then wipe the tears from your eyes and pacify you. Then after burning your son's bodies, you can take your bath standing on his head.
So Aswatthama is a Brahman. He is the son of Dronacharya. So he should not be killed. However, an aggressor, even if he is a Brahmana, he can be killed. So Prabhupada writes in this purport, an enemy who sets fire to a house, administers poison, attacks with deadly weapons, and plunders wealth, or usurps agricultural lands, or kidnaps one's wife. So all these kinds of aggressors can be killed. So Aswatthama killed 5 sleeping sons of Pandavas. So they are young people and they are sleeping also. It's such a heinous act on the part of a Brahman to do it. So he's supposed to be punished. So he did not behave like a Brahman, he behaved like a butcher, merciless butcher. So no question of sin in killing such a Brahmana's son who proved to be a villain. Provides. Now 17th verse is the first entrance of Krishna in Bhagavata. So far Krishna did not enter. The hero is entering. See how he enters. Iti priyam valgu vichitra jalpaihe na santvayitva achyuta mitra sutah anvadravaddam shita ugradhanvam kapidhajo guru putram rathena.
Arjuna, who is guided by infallible Lord as friend and driver, thus satisfied the dear lady by such statements, then he dressed in armor and armed himself with furious weapons, and getting into his chariot, he set out to follow Aswatthama, the son of his martial teacher.
So, iti priyam valgu vichitra jalpaihi. So, Arjuna pacified Draupadi nicely with pacifying words. Then, sasanta neka, sasanta itva, achyuta mitra suta. Achyuta, Krishna, is introduced as Mitra Sutaha. He is the chariot driver of his friend Arjuna. So Krishna is introduced as chariot driver of Arjuna. That is his entry in Bhagavatam, first time. Right? When our hero enters in a movie, a lot of background music is given, his different limbs are shown in different styles from different angles, perspectives.
Legs come out of the car.
Or first the villains. Some people who are fighting with him, they will just jump like this, and then he is shown from back, front, all these kinds of things are seen in movies. But Krishna, South Indian. So, Achyuta Mitra Sutaha, Krishna is introduced as a chariot driver of Krishna, of Arjuna. So it's not very graphical, it's a very humble introduction of Krishna. And Krishna wanted to be known as a menial servant of his devotees. That is the theme, that is the character of Krishna in this entire episode. Here in this beautiful chapter 1.7, Krishna takes a subordinate role only. Arjuna is a hero, Krishna is just his driver. And actually seeing Krishna only orchestrates the entire situation there, right? He is there in every view, but not prominent character, right? So Bhagavatam, although in certain episodes, doesn't put Krishna as the prominent character, but it makes Krishna's bhakta vatsalyata as prominent emotion in the episode. So Krishna is not prominently seen here, prominently introduced here. He is not accepting Agra Puja in the Rajasvi Yajna as it is described in the 10th canto. But here Krishna's bhakta vatsalyata, Krishna's intimate friendship with Arjuna, they are highlighted in this chapter. Very sweet chapter. We'll see. And how Krishna brings out the best of everyone. How Krishna tries to announce the wonderful qualities of Arjuna and Draupadi and Yudhishthira in this chapter. All these are nicely seen. Krishna is just mentioned in the background. He does the needful so that the glories of his devotees come out in this chapter. Next, 18th verse. Please read the translation.
Aswatthama, the murderer of the princess, seeing from a great distance Arjuna coming at him with great speed, fled in his chariot. panic stricken just to save his life as Brahma fled in fear from Shiva.
Mm-hmm. So Arjuna was chasing Ashwatthama and Ashwatthama was running away. That is compared to Brahma running away from Shiva or Surya running away from Shiva. So once Brahmaji was running behind his daughter and Shiva became angry and then he started chasing Brahma. And once there was a demon named Vidyunmali, he was gifted by Shiva one airplane. He was Shiva was favorable towards him for whatever reasons. So what he did was Vidyunmali, he went behind the sun and started following the sun like this. And his chariot is quite bright. So sun is moving and then he is creating more light behind also. So sun became little disturbed by this. He started chasing. And because Shiva was favoring Vidyunmali and Shiva started chasing sun. So that was an incident which was mentioned in the commentaries. So like that, that's an analogy. That's not the main subject matter of this chapter. So Ashwatthama started running away from Arjuna like that. The 19th verse.
यदा शरणमात्मानम्
अस्त्रं ब्रह्मशिरोमेने आत्मत्राणं द्विजात्मनः.
He considered that there was no alternative for protection outside of his using the ultimate weapon, the Brahmastra, nuclear weapon.
So Ashwatthama has good knowledge. What? How powerful is the combination of Krishna and Arjuna? He has seen the battlefield, Kurukshetra battlefield. How powerful is this combination? And Ashwatthama lost everybody on his side, and he was alone running away, and Krishna and Arjuna were chasing him. Ashwatthama had no way out. Either he has to commit suicide or he has to destroy everything. Only two options for him. So when devotees are placed in a helpless situation, they take shelter of Krishna. When demoniac people are placed in helpless situation, what they do? They commit suicide or they try to destroy everything. So Arjuna, Ashwatthama releases Brahmastra. He doesn't know what to do. He doesn't know how to retract that astra also. That's the only thing that he thought, that the only intelligent thing I can do is to release Brahmastra. Right? So he just very unintelligently he just released Brahmastra. So he kind of there is an attempt to destroy entire cosmos only. Right? Very thoughtlessly done activity. That's why one should not give such kind of weapons to unqualified people who don't know how to use it. Ashwatthama somehow had the knowledge of releasing Brahmastra, but he has no knowledge of retracting Brahmastra. If you see the example of Kamsa, Kamsa tried to kill Krishna and Balaram through so many demons, and at one point Narada Muni comes and informs that Krishna and Balaram are actually sons of Vasudeva. Then Kamsa makes a master plan. He says, I will start Dhanurjagya. So first he sends Akrura to bring Krishna and Balaram. Before Akrura goes, he sends Keshi and Vyoma to kill Krishna and Balaram. So if that plan fails, Akrura will bring them here. Then I will put my Kovalayapeda. So Kovalayapeda elephant will kill them. If elephant cannot kill them, then I have my reasoners. Shala, Toshala, Kuta, Chanura, Mushtika, all these fellows will kill Krishna and Balaram. If they also can't kill, I am there. That's a master plan he has made. And Krishna killed one by one all of these people. He killed Keshi, he killed Vyoma, he killed Kovalayapeda, he killed Shala, Toja, and all these people were killed. And finally only Kamsa was left. So in that helpless situation, what he was doing? He just stood on the dais, kill Ugrasena, kill Vasudev, kill Nanda Maharaj, kill everybody. Right, arrest everybody. That is how he was like, very madly he was just announcing or passing orders. So in such a helpless situation, devotee takes shelter of Krishna, but demoniac people, they think of only mass destruction. Nothing else will come to their minds. So Ashwatthama did like that. Next, no alternative. Being a friend of Brahmana does not mean one meaning that one is a Brahmana by qualification. He is called, that's why he is called Brahma Bandhu. He is not called a qualified Brahmana. Please read the next verse.
Since his life was in danger, he touched water in a sanctity and concentrated upon the chanting of the hymns for throwing the nuclear weapons, although he did not know how to withdraw such weapons.
Next.
Thereupon a glaring light spread in all directions. It was so fierce that Arjun thought his own life in danger, and so he began to address Lord Shri Krishna.
So when Brahmastra was released, it was such an unexpected thing, even Arjuna could not expect, because Brahmastra is not released ordinarily, right? So he released. So much of glaring light was there. Arjuna felt that his life was in danger. What he do? What he did? He did not release Brahmastra. He took shelter of Krishna. In danger, devotee takes shelter of Krishna. In danger, demon contemplates on destruction. Simple. Arjuna offers prayers. This is the first set of prayers in Bhagavad, 22nd verse onwards. There were some differences in the details given in Bhagavatam and Mahabharat. Just now Rajesh Lulpo was also mentioning me. So, I don't know those details actually. Arjuna Uvacha,
Arjuna Uvacha,
Krishna Krishna Mahabaho,
Krishna Krishna Mahabaho,
Bhaktanam Abhayankaram,
Bhaktanam Abhayankaram,
Tvameko Dahyamananam,
Tvameko Dahyamananam,
Apavargosi Samsmrite,
Apavargosi Samsmrite.
Arjuna said, O my Lord Shri Krishna, you are the almighty personality of Godhead. There is no limit to your different energies. Therefore, only you are competent to instill fearlessness in the hearts of your devotees. Mm. Everyone in the flames of material miseries can find the path of liberation in only you.
Krishna, Krishna, Mahabaho. Oh, mighty I am Krishna. Out of his helplessness and dependence on Krishna, he is calling Krishna, Krishna twice. An English editor might remove that one word, right? Krishna is mentioned twice. Or did he, is it a filler there to match the chandas of the verse? There should be number of certain number of syllables in a verse, Sanskrit verse, for it to be rhyming, to match certain poetic norms. So, many times we see Krishna, Krishna, these are mentioned twice. Suta, Suta, Mahabhagu, Krishna, Krishna, Mahabahu, all these are mentioned, that is their ecstasy. Bhaktana Abhayankara, you are the only person who can cause fearlessness in the hearts of devotees. Bhaktana Abhayankara. Tvam Eko Dahyamananam. How will he cause fearlessness in the hearts of devotees? What is the cause of fear? Cause of fear is the samsara. And what does Krishna do? Tvam Eko Dahyamananam. Apavargosi Samsrute. You will just destroy the material existence of devotees. That is how he will cause fearlessness. The greatest fear for the soul is to be entrapped in this material existence. And Krishna will remove that fear by removing that material existence. And Guru also can do it. Samsara Dhavana Lalila Loka. There are different urges for the living entity. Eating, sleeping, waiting, defending. Out of these four, defending or fear is most prominent emotion. So Krishna can remove that. So, this Krishna's fear removal thing is mentioned in the next chapter also. Uttara comes and prays. What is that verse? 1.8. Uttara, when she comes to Krishna, Pahi Pahi Mahayogin Deva Deva Jagatpate Nanya Tvad Abhayam Pashye. Tvad Abhayam Pashye. No one else can give fearlessness apart from you, my dear Krishna. Same thing Arjuna is also saying. You remove fear. So Arjuna's version of Krishna is most authoritative. Why we have to accept that Krishna will provide fearlessness? Because Krishna is all powerful. He is beyond this material existence. Such a person only can bring one out of the material existence. Someone who is thrown into a dark well, how can he protect someone else who is also there in the dark well? Someone who is outside the dark well, he can bring him out. Krishna is never entangled in this material existence. Only such a person can pull you out of material existence. So, Arjuna's version is authentic. A devotee of the Lord is always fearless. because of the protection given by the Lord. Okay, next 22nd, 23rd verse.
कैवल्ये
स्थित आत्मनि. कृष्ण में से यू आर सेइंग महाबाहो भाव कृष्ण कृष्ण महाबाहो भक्तानाम अभयंकर लाइक दैट यू आर प्रीचिंग मी इन वेरियस वेज. आई एम जस्ट योर कजिन. I am an equal. Why are you saying like that? Then Arjuna responds in this verse. No, you are not my equal. You are not my cousin. I know your glories. Tvam adhyah purushakshat sakshat. You are the original person. There could be so many persons. You are the origin of all persons. You are the original personality of Godhead. Even Bhishma also says, Narayana, adhyo Narayana puman. How does that verse begin? आद्यो नारायण पुमान एष वै भगवान साक्षात आद्यो नारायण पुमान. सो ही सेज लाइक दैट. सो द पर्सन कृष्ण स्टैंडिंग नेक्स्ट टू यू डोंट कंसीडर हिम योर कजिन योर रिलेटिव योर फ्रेंड. ही इज द ओरिजिनल नारायण. ऑल अदर नारायण आर जेरॉक्स कॉपीज जस्ट लाइक राधेश्याम प्रभु सेज राइट. ही इज द ओरिजिनल कॉपी ऑफ ऑल नारायण. ऑल नारायण आर कमिंग फ्रॉम हिम फ्रॉम कृष्ण. Again, he also says, Tvam adhyah purusha sakshat. Purusha can also mean purushavatara, Mahavishnu. Ishvara prakrute paraha. You are the supreme controller, Ishvara. Prakrute paraha. You are transcendental to material nature. Mayam yudasya chitshaktya. You have cast away the influence of this material energy by your chitshakti, by your internal potency. Because you are always situated in your internal potency, kaivalya sthita atmani, external energy cannot influence you. That will influence conditioned souls, not you. So he established his position as transcendental. Prabhupada explains different aspects of this verse by quoting various other verses without giving their numbers. The Lord states in Bhagavad Gita that one who surrenders unto the lotus feet of Krishna can release from the clutches of designs. What is this? Saradharman parityajya mam ekam sharanam raja. Next. Even Krishna is addressed as original personality of Godhead. From him all other personalities expand. Aham sarvasya praho matta sarvam pravartate. Or aham adir hi devanam maharshinam pi sarvasyah. Or krishnastu bhavan swayam. Hete jam sakala pumsa krishnastu bhavan swayam. All these. Many of the statements or most of the statements of Prabhupada are just translations of different verses in a paraphrased manner. Sometimes he gives reference, sometimes he may not give. So when someone is absorbed in Krishna's glories by regular study of Shastra and speaking of Shastra and taking shelter of Shastra and trying to apply Shastra, what he speaks is everyday Shastra. All the statements of Prabhupada are just repetition of Shastric statements. Right? Next, the all-pervasive feature of the Lord experienced within the manifested world is also partial representation of the Lord, Paramatma. So next Prabhupada quotes this Vadanti Tattva Vidas Tattvam Vijnanam Advayam. That is the translation. So next. In the 22nd verse, he described Krishna as ultimate shelter. In the 23rd verse, Arjuna described Krishna as transcendental. In the 24th verse, Arjuna describes Krishna as most merciful person. Saeva jiva lokasyam
Saeva jiva lokasyam
Maya mohita chetasah
Maya mohita chetasah
Vidhatse svena viryena
Vidhatse svena viryena
Shreyo dharma dilakshanam
Shreyo dharma dilakshanam.
And yet, though you are beyond the purview of the material energy, you execute the four principles of liberation recognized by religion and so on for the ultimate good of the conditioned soul.
So, eva jiva jiva lokasya maya mohita chetasaha. So, all the jivas in this world are maya mohita chetasaha. Their consciousness is bewildered by maya. Maya mohita chetasaha. Then, vidhatse svena viryena shreyo dharmadi lakshanam. And what you do out of your mercy is Krishna also teaches them how to follow dharma by himself following it. You are in the bewilderment of maya. How do you come out of this bewilderment? By following the religion. and Krishna himself follows it and shows, exemplifies, this is how one should behave. Although he, in the previous verse he described him as transcendental, now he says, although you are transcendental, although you are beyond the period of material nature, you execute four principles of religion, four principles of liberation, characterized by dharma, artha, kama, moksha, etc. for the good of conditioned living entity. Krishna is not obliged to follow the rules of Brahmana or Kshatriya or whatever species he may be in. He need not end cows. But he does it out of his ecstasy, and he also exemplifies it for other people to follow. So the reason for Krishna's descent is mentioned in this purport. Prabhupada writes, he is eternally beyond the material manifestations. He descends out of his causeless mercy only to reclaim the fallen souls who are captivated by illusory energy. This material creation is a reclaiming program of Krishna. Reclaiming program. One is eternally the servitor of the Lord, and when he forgets this position, he thinks of enjoying the material world. But factually, that is not enjoyment, that is illusion. To bring out the living entity of that illusory condition, Lord descends and performs pastimes, and he teaches. He sends his representatives. Arjuna further describes the reason for Krishna's descent in the 25th verse. Tathayam chavataraste bhuvo bhadrajihirshayam svanam chananya bhavanam anudhananya chasakrit.
Thus you descend as an incarnation to remove the burden of the world and to benefit your friends, especially those who are your exclusive devotees and are wrapped in meditation upon you.
Tathayam chatvara chavataraste bhuvo bharajihirshaya. You descend for removing the burden of this world. Bhuvo bharajihirshaya. Then svanam cha ananya bhavanam. Svana means Lord's own devotees. Ananya bhavanam, without any deviations or distractions, they just focus on devotional service of Krishna. Anudhyanaya chasakrit. Anudhyanaya means meditates. Ananya bhavena, without any distractions, devotees meditate upon Krishna. Krishna descends to deliver them. This is, you can say, this is another answer to the third question asked by the sages. What is the reason for Krishna's descent? Third question the sages asked, right, in first canto, first chapter. This is also a similar answer. So Lord is equal to everyone, but when devotees are there, they are more inclined towards the Lord, then Lord also will be more inclined. He is equal in the sense that he equally reciprocates, right? Everybody sitting in the prasadam hall are equal to the prasadam server. Means everybody will get four chapatis. I want only two. No, four you take. I want five. No, you take only four. Not like that. Whatever he wants, he will give. Not the gulab jamun part. I am telling you about the common things. Right? So, equal vision means feeding as much as the person wants. So, Lord also reciprocates. Eyathamam prapadyante tam sadaya bhajamyaham. He is reciprocal. Kimidam svit kuto veti deva deva na vedyamham sarvato mukhamayati yejah paramadarunam. So after glorifying Krishna in various ways, one, he said, ultimate shelter, you are transcendental, you are very merciful, and you descend to deliver people. After describing him, he gives the reason for his prayers. I am praying now because this effulgence is bewildering me. Where is this coming from? What is the reason? He says, read. O Lord of Lords,
how is it that this dangerous effulgence is spreading all around? Where does it come from? I do not understand it.
So where does it come from? He should have asked this in the 22nd verse only. Why he is asking in the 26th verse? Four verses. Everybody knows this. Krishna also knows this. Arjuna also knows this. But still he mentioned all that. You are transcendental, you are merciful, you are this, you are that. Then he is presenting this. Prabhupada writes in the purport, anything that is presented before the Lord should be done so after due presentation of respectful prayers. Not just barging into a higher authority's room. Take permission. May I come in? Then you come. he will give permission and you know you can go inside, but still that permission is compulsory, right? So Prabhupada says he may want to ask something, but presenting it in a nice manner is always appealing, is needed. After due presentation of respectful prayers, this is the standard procedure. That is the standard procedure, and Arjuna, although an intimate friend, still he observed this method for general information. So one cannot surpass this kind of protocols or apparent rituals. They carry a lot of weightage, right? They actually reveal one's tender sentiments towards the Lord. I am in need, let me express my need. Now, before expressing my need, let me express my gratitude towards that person. Let me express my appreciation towards that person. Let me recognize what he has done for me so far. Then I will express my need. So that is what Arjuna is exemplifying here. So that reveals that one need tender sentiments in our heart to experience the bliss of bhakti. If one is just focusing on what needs to be done, then these details, important details, may go in sidetrack, and one may lose the habit of doing it also. Right? So one should not give up formalities especially when he is in hurry. One cannot give up formalities. We should be aware. So that, who is that Srikant Singh? He comes in front of Mahaprabhu, he doesn't offer obeisances, and then he directly says something. So there are certain examples like that. Now in the first canto of 14th chapter, Arjuna comes back from Dwaraka. Yudhishthira Maharaj sends Arjuna to Dwaraka. 7 months he is there, so he would come back. And meanwhile, Krishna's disappearance and everything happens. Arjuna comes in such a dejected mood. Still, he offers obeisances to Yudhishthir and then stands there. Then Yudhishthir has so many questions and all the other things will proceed. Even in such a dejected mood, the total moroseness because of the disappearance of Krishna also, Arjuna did not neglect the etiquette of offering respects to Yudhishthir before speaking in front of him. So etiquettes are very important. From Arjuna's behavior itself, we can learn. Dhruva Maharaj was about to board Vaikuntha airplane. Vaikuntha airplane came in 4th canto 12th chapter. So Dhruva Maharaj did not just jump inside it. He went, took bath, and offered respects to all the sages present there, and then he boarded respectfully. I am qualified to go to Vaikuntha, you people are still here. That pride did not enter. He is taking blessings from them, and then he is boarding the Vaikuntha airplane. So even Kaviraj Goswami, he went to Madan Mohan temple. He took permission from Madan Mohan and then began writing Chaitanya Charitamrita. And he felt that garland fell from Madan Mohan ji on me. That's an approval that Madan Mohan is saying that I can write Chaitanya Charitamrita. If you want to write, you write. Why so much of big thing before it? No, they are important. These are finer sentiments of a devotee. Right? Especially approaching a superior person, guru or Krishna, like this, he offers prayers and then does his proposal. Now Krishna is responding. Sri Bhagavan Vacha.
Sri Bhagavan Vacha.
Vethedam Drona Putrasya.
Vethedam Drona Putrasya.
Brahmam Astram Pradarshitam.
Brahmam Astram Pradarshitam.
Naivaso Veda Samharam.
Naivaso Veda Samharam.
Pranabadha Upasthite.
Pranabadha Upasthite.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "Know from me that this is the act of the son of Drona. He has thrown the beams of nuclear energy, that is Brahmastra, and he does not know how to retract the glare. He has helplessly done this, being afraid of the imminent death."
So in these purports, please read the next translation also. We'll discuss.
"O Arjuna, only another Brahmastra can counteract this weapon. Since you are expert in the military science, subdue this weapon's glare with the power of your own weapon."
So 27th verse, Krishna gave the cause of this effulgence. 28th verse, he gave the solution also. This is because of Arjuna's Brahmastra. And how will you do handle it? You really another Brahmastra and then retract both. So he gave the solution also. Prabhupada in this purports, he writes that Brahmastra is to give an understanding to the modern man. Prabhupada says it is like an atomic bomb, nuclear weapon. So there are different kinds of weapons. Some are using the material energy, they are gross. Both are using material energy, but some are like gross weapons. Some are subtle weapons. These weapons can be invoked by chanting mantras. Then the destruction will happen. So gross destruction will happen by subtly invoking the material elements. So whether subtle or gross, both are material only. So Prabhupada says that. So this subtle science of chanting mantras and doing some destruction is not known to the modern scientists. So Arjuna knows, Ashwathama knows, like that. Next, Sutta is continuing. Please read.
Sri Sutta Goswami said, hearing this from the personality of Godhead, Arjuna touched water for purification, and after circumambulating Lord Sri Krishna, he cast his Brahmastra weapon to contract the other one.
So please read translations of 30, 31 and 32 that describe the effect of two Brahmastras.
When the rays of the two Brahmastras combined, the great circle of fire, like the disk of the sun, covered all outer space and the whole firmament of planets. All the population of the three worlds was scorched by the combined heat of the weapons. Everyone was reminded of the Samvartaka fire, which takes place at the time of annihilation. Thus seeing the disturbance of the general populace and the imminent destruction of the planets, Arjuna at once retracted both Brahmastra weapons, as Lord Sri Krishna did.
So the effect of two Brahmastras are described, and Arjuna's retracting of this Brahmastra is also described. And why did he do so? Because Krishna desired. As Krishna desired. So, matamcha vasudevasya. Matamcha vasudevasya sanjahara arjuno dvayam. So, sanjahara means retracted. Because of what? Matamcha vasudevasya. By the will of Krishna. Prabhupada focuses on that word. Matamcha vasudevasya. Matamcha Vasudevasya is most important. The theory that the atomic bomb explosions can annihilate the world is a childish imagination. First of all, atomic energy is not powerful enough to destroy the world. Second, ultimately, whether to destroy or create something, Lord's sanction is important. If Krishna wills, then destruction will happen. If Krishna's will matches with your action, then destruction will happen. So what will prevail is Krishna's will, not the living entity's whim. Or you can say the other way. It's not the living entity's will that prevails, it's Krishna's whim that prevails. Right? Krishna can do anything. Kartum, akartum, anyatha kartum. He can do, he can undo. He can type, he can press Ctrl Z. He can press Ctrl C and Ctrl V. He can delete the file. He can create the file. He can do anything. Kartum, akartum. He has all passwords. But for us, it is password protected. We can't do it. If Krishna gives us the password, then we can do something on the file. So it's like that. Kartum akartum. So ultimately, it all rests on the supreme will of the Lord. Because without His will or sanction, nothing can be built up or destroyed. Creation or destruction, it has to be sanctioned by Krishna. It is foolish also to think that natural laws are ultimately powerful. The world can be destroyed only by the will of the Lord and not by the whims of tiny politicians. Krishna desired that the weapons released by both Drauni and Arjuna be withdrawn, and it was carried out by Arjuna at once. Similarly, there are many agents of the all-powerful Lord, and by His will only one can execute what He desires. Beautiful purport. So where Prabhupada is highlighting that you don't think you are the doer. Krishna is the doer. Krishna desires, and if your actions match, align with Krishna's desire, you become a part of Krishna's plan. And you may not be a part of Krishna's plan, still Krishna may use you to do something. Right? You don't want to be a part of His plan, but through you also Krishna can do some things. So ultimately Krishna's will is happening. So anyways, you have to act according to the will of Krishna only. Why can't do that voluntarily? So, and if one does something on behalf of Krishna, how can he claim credit for what he has done? So in the 15th chapter of first canto also, Prabhupada writes brilliant purports. So one may accomplish so many things. Arjuna actually fought in the war of Kurukshetra, and he killed so many warriors. But after Krishna's disappearance and when Arjuna was coming out of Dwaraka, he could not defeat even some cowherds also. So Prabhupada writes, Lord gives certain powers to a living entity for the execution of certain service. Once the service is done, accomplished, he withdraws those powers. Because these powers or skills are not needed to go back to Godhead. What is needed to go back to Godhead is the devotional service of the devotee. His bhakti, his love and affection towards the Lord. His chanting, his quality of his devotional service. Not the quantity of his devotional service. Right? So, skills are needed. If one has skills, that's an additional asset. One can utilize them in Krishna. But one needs to understand that Krishna is giving me the skills to execute this service. One cannot be proud or puffed up because of the borrowed plumes of feather. Prabhupada writes in that purport. Borrowed plumes. Krishna gave the skills to do certain tasks. Once the task is done, he will take back the powers. So one cannot think to continue in this process of devotional service just based on. His impetus should not be just based on certain skills to do certain things. Skills may manifest and unmanifest according to Krishna's will. But devotion manifests or unmanifests according to devotee's will. So it's up to devotee's responsibility how much he engages his free will and minute independence to dovetail it in Krishna's service and Guru's service. It's within his hands. Right? And Krishna wants that. Krishna never forces anyone to love him. Krishna may force 100 people to do 100 kinds of things. But Krishna never forces anyone to love him. The only possession that the living entity has is to voluntarily to do something, to love Krishna. That voluntarily expression of one's love for Krishna is his asset. Nothing else is his asset. Apparently it may seem, these resources are mine, this manpower are mine, these skills are mine, I can do many things. They are all coming from Krishna and they stay with us temporarily. Right, once the age increases, health deteriorates, all the skills will go away, physical abilities will go away. But what remains is the quality of feelings that we have cultivated towards Krishna. So, Krishna's will prevails, not one's whims, not one's powers, not one's skills, etc. Next, Tata Asadhya Tarasa.
Tata Asadhya Tarasa.
Darunam Gautami Sutam.
Darunam Gautami Sutam.
Babandhamarshatam Raksha.
Babandhamarshatam Raksha.
Pashum Rashanaya Yatha.
Pashum Rashanaya Yatha.
Arjuna, his eyes blazing in anger like two red balls of copper, dexterously arrested the son of Gautami and bound him with ropes like an animal.
So Arjuna's eyes were described as Tamraksha, right? Amarsha Tamraksha. Amarsha means he has lot of anger and eyes are like copper balls, red copper balls. So he arrested him like an animal. So although he is a Brahmana, he is supposed to be arrested and punished like an animal because he acted like a butcher. What he did is a very heinous act. Now let's see what happens next. Shibiraya Nineshantam.
Shibiraya Nineshantam.
Rajjava Badhva Ripumbalat.
Rajjava Badhva Ripumbalat.
Praharjunam Prakupito.
Praharjunam Prakupito.
Bhagavan Ambujekshana.
Bhagavan Ambujekshana.
After binding Ashwatthama, Arjuna wanted to take him to the military camp. The personality of Godhead, Shri Krishna, looking with his lotus eyes, spoke to angry Arjuna.
So, Praha Arjunam Prakupito Bhagavan Ambujekshanah. See the second two lines. Here Krishna is also Prakupito, very angry. And his eyes are Ambujekshanah, lotus eyes. Arjuna was angry. Amarsha, he was angry. And his eyes were Tamrakshah. Both were angry. Their moods are same. But Krishna's angry eyes are like lotus eyes. Arjuna's angry eyes are copper red, hot eyes. So that shows that Krishna is beautiful even in anger mood. Even if he is angry, he is beautiful. And his anger is transcendental. And here his anger is an imitation. He is not actually angry. Right? So both Arjuna and Krishna, his angry mood, Lord is in transcendence and thus he is absolute in any stage. So because he is absolute, both his anger and pleasure are the same. His anger is not exhibited under the three modes of material nature. It is only a sign of his bent of mind towards the cause of his devotee. Because my devotee is angry, let me encourage him by exhibiting the same mood of anger as him. Like that, to encourage Arjuna, to support Arjuna, to show his inclination and bent towards Krishna, towards Arjuna, Krishna exhibited anger. Otherwise, how can anger manifest in Sachidananda Vigraha, Shanta Vigraha? So, even if he is angry, the object of anger is blessed. He is unchanged in all circumstances. Even in Damodar Leela also, very soon we will celebrate Damodar festival. There also, Krishna exhibited anger. Trividham narakasyedam dvaram nashanam atmanah kama krodhas tatha lobaha tasma detatrayam tyadit. Right? Kama krodha tatha lobaha. Kama is lust, desire. Krodha is anger. Lobha is greed. So these three are gateways to hell. Krishna says that in Bhagavad Gita. But Krishna exhibited all these three in Damodar Leela. Kama, he became stanya kama. He wanted to take milk from mother's body, right, Yashoda's body. So kama, then lobha, he became more greedy for milk. When mother Yashoda fed him for a long time, quite a long time, and kept him aside, he became more greedy. And when she went away, he became very angry. He was biting his lips with his teeth and broke a pot. All these three were exhibited. So kama, krodha, lobha were exhibited, but they were all transcendental. It is transcendental anger. It is transcendental greed. It is transcendental desire when Krishna does it. So Krishna, whatever he does is transcendental. Next, from 35th verse onwards, Krishna gives various arguments why Arjuna has to punish or kill Ashwatthama. So from here onwards, the rest of the chapter is various arguments by various personalities whether to kill Ashwatthama or not kill. Very interesting. Read the translation.
Lord Sri Krishna said, O Arjuna, you should not show mercy by releasing this relative of a Brahmana, Brahman Bandhu, for he has killed innocent boys in their sleep.
He is a Brahma Bandhum. Brahma Bandhum Himam Jahi. So you should not show mercy upon this Brahma Bandhu because he killed sleeping sons. So first argument he gives. He is a Brahma Bandhu. So all these arguments I have mentioned in Bhagavad Subodhani, all the highlighted words and the table you can see, that will be like a summary. The son of a high court judge is not virtually a high court. So Prabhupada explains about that Brahma Bandhu. So somebody may be son of Brahmana, that doesn't mean he becomes a Brahmana. Because son of a high court judge, will he become a high court judge? He may be honored as a son of a high court judge, but he may not be high court judge. He may have a opportunity to become a high court judge, but that doesn't mean he is a high court judge, like that. So quality is different from birthright, that Prabhupada explains. Now, he is a Brahma Bandhu, he is not a Brahmana. That is 35th verse. 36th verse is, he violated the codes of war. Mattam pramattam unmattam.
Mattam pramattam unmattam.
Shuptam balam striyam jadam.
Shuptam balam striyam jadam.
Prapannam viratham bhitam.
Prapannam viratham bhitam.
Naripum hanti dharmavit.
Naripum hanti dharmavit.
Here he describes the course of religious war. Dharma yuddha. Mattam, one who is very careless. Pramattam, one who is intoxicated. Unmattam, when he is insane. Shuptam, when he is sleeping. Balam, one who is a child. Then Striyam, one who is a woman. Jadam, one who is fool. Prapannam, one who has surrendered unto the enemy. Then Viratham, one who has no chariot. Bhitam, one who is fearful. So all these people are not supposed to be killed. And here this Ashwatthama, he killed 5 sons of Pandava who were not on the battlefield, who were sleeping on their beds. And they are children also. So he violated the codes of religious war. He is supposed to be killed. So such people should not be shown mercy only. So So when to show compassion, when to do justice, that's an art. One has to actually discriminate when to show compassion and when to do justice. So this is very important. Formerly, battles were fought on the principles of religion and not for the sake of sense gratification. So an enemy who does not resist is never killed by a warrior, one who knows the principles of religion. For example, even in the fight between Hiranyaksha and Varahadev, they were fighting. At one point, Varahadev's weapon fell down. Then Hiranyaksha did not attack him. Although he is a demon, he did not attack him. So there are so many other incidents where the enemies, the opposite party in the war, so they appreciated the prowess of this party. So like the, and when they did not have weapon, they just waited for a while till he picks up the weapon and then throws again. So these were all certain norms that one has to follow. But he disrespected those norms. Next. Svapranandya paraprani. Prapushnatya grana khala. Tadvadhastasya hishreyo. Yaddoshadyatyadha puman.
A cruel and wretched person who maintains his existence at the cost of others' lives deserves to be killed for his own well-being. Otherwise, he will go down by his own actions.
Svaprana ya paraprana. So, one who just lives at the cost of others' lives or others' expense, he is not supposed to live only. He is just living to trouble others. And he should be killed for his own well-being. If he lives and continues to trouble others, continues to kill others and cause all kinds of mischief, then it is not a very good, intelligent thing to allow him to live. If you kill him, at least he will stop these activities. That will be good for him also. That will be good for others also. So it is intelligent to kill that kind of people for their own well-being. So Prabhupada writes that a life for a life is just punishment for a person who cruelly and shamelessly lives at the cost of another's life. Life for a life is a just punishment because he will cause destruction of more lives if he is continued to live. So death sentence for the murderer is the lowest possible punishment offered to him. He kills one person, and if he is not given a death punishment, he is encouraged to kill other people, and others are encouraged to kill more people. That causes more destruction than killing this one fellow. That's actually protecting him and protecting others also. These are certain laws. So, Prabhupada writes, for example, somebody maintains a slaughterhouse. Who are all implicated in that? One who gives permission to kill the animals like that, organized way. One who kills the animals. One who sells the flesh. One who cooks the meat. And one who distributes that food, serves that food. And one who eats. All these six people are implicated in that animal killing business. So, by killing a killer, we are saving six kinds of people. And by allowing him to continue living, he may create this set of six people at many places, right? Multiple sets of six people will form. So better to kill him. That's what he says. No one can create a living being despite all advancement of material science. For one who has no authority or no power to create something, how can he destroy? He cannot create a living being. He cannot create a soul. How can he destroy a person? So no one can create a living being despite all advancement of material science. And therefore no one has the right to kill any living being by one's independent whims. This word whims comes in a couple of purports in this chapter. Next, the procedure under which animal sacrifice is allowed is, for example, in Vedic scriptures, sacrifices are allowed. Animal sacrifices are allowed. So why they are allowed? They are good for the performer of the sacrifice. They are good for the animal being sacrificed. How? By sacrificing an animal, one is giving a better birth to that animal. Second, by when a person kills that animal, he kills under certain rules and regulations. He does it under by following certain Shastric rules. That means regulation. If this regulation is not imposed, if he is not encouraged to kill animals based on Shastras, he will kill animals not based on Shastras, unrestrictedly. At least by following Shastra, he is trying to become better, a better human being, by aligning himself to some protocol. Eventually, he will give that up also. So, that is why this kind of regulations are needed. Now, Uddhava Gita also, Krishna says one verse in relation to this. We can discuss after the class if time permits. Next, pratishrutam cha bhavata,
pratishrutam cha bhavata,
panchalyai shrinvato mama,
panchalyai shrinvato mama,
aharishye sirastasya,
aharishye sirastasya,
yaste manini putraha,
yaste manini putraha.
Furthermore, I have personally heard you promised Draupadi that you would bring forth the head of the killer of her sons.
So, you already promised Draupadi. One reason is he is a Brahma Bandhu. Second reason is he violated the courts of war. Third reason, such people who exist at the cost of others, they should be killed for their own benefit. Fourth reason is you promised Draupadi. Then fifth reason, he is a murderer and he dissatisfied his master also. He killed for no one's benefit. He did not gain anything. His master did not gain anything. We did not gain anything. He did some stupid activity for no one's benefit. Such a useless activity he has done. So he should be killed. That is the 39th verse. Please read. This man is an assassin and murderer of your own family members. Not only that, but he has also dissatisfied his master. He is but the burnt remnants of his family. Kill him immediately. Yes. Next, these are the reasons given by Krishna so that Arjuna can kill Aswatthama. Very five strong reasons. But actually Krishna did not mean that Arjuna can kill Aswatthama. So sometimes we are told to do something, but actually whoever is telling that, they don't want us to do it. That requires a lot of intimate relationship and deep relationship to understand the intention of a person behind the words. Words are emphasizing very emphatically that he should kill, but intention is only to test Arjuna. See what Swati Goswami says. Evam parikshata dharmam.
Evam parikshata dharmam.
Partha Krishnena chodita.
Partha Krishnena chodita.
Naichaddhantum Guru Sutam.
Naichaddhantum Guru Sutam.
Yadyapyatmanam Mahan.
Yadyapyatmanam Mahan.
Please read.
Although Krishna was examining Arjuna's religion, encouraged Arjuna to kill the son of Dronacharya, Arjuna, a great soul, did not like the idea of killing him. Although Aswatthama was a heinous murderer of Arjuna's family.
So Krishna told in 5 verses you kill Aswatthama, but actually Krishna did not want Arjuna to kill Aswatthama. So, but he mentioned in a certain way. So if the instruction is very clear and unambiguous, the follower can immediately execute it. But if he senses something different, if the intention seems little different from what he says, one should give a benefit of doubt and not execute it also. Sometimes when we go to our authorities and ask for permission, they may give a reluctant permission. You can notice it. One need not use that permission. Okay, because I am adamant he gave me that permission, but actually he doesn't want me to go. So that needs a deeper relationship to understand the intention of the master behind his apparent words. Arjuna was expert in understanding that. So, next, even Mahaprabhu was not approving Jagadanand Pandit going to Vrindavan. Many times he says in a different ways and he tries to avoid. Finally he gave permission reluctantly. With so many conditions. Star. You can go to Vrindavan, star. Conditions apply. Right? Don't associate with everyone. Be with Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami only. Don't get into arguments with other Vrajavasis like that. He gives so many conditions. So Arjuna was undoubtedly a great soul. Here it is said, evam parikshata dharmam. Just to test test his sense of duty. Parikshita means pariksha, examination. Dharma means duty. Just to test the sense of Arjuna's duty, Krishna told him to kill Ashwatthama. Otherwise, he actually didn't mean. So Krishna encouraged Arjuna outwardly just to test Arjuna's sense of duty. It is not that Arjuna was incomplete in the sense of duty, nor was Krishna is unaware about Arjuna's sense of duty. But still he did it. Why Krishna has to test Arjuna? Because Krishna already knows about Arjuna's sense of duty, still he did it. Because he wanted to reveal Arjuna's sense of duty to others. Krishna knows Arjuna's dharma, how dharmic Arjuna is. How do we know if Krishna doesn't reveal it to us? So apparently Lord may say so many things to his devotees, one cannot take it literally. For example, Narasimhadev told Prahlad Maharaj, accept some material benedictions. Accept this. Then Prahlad Maharaj says, am I a businessman or what? Right? So I am not a businessman. In exchange of my devotional service, I don't want anything from you back. So to reveal this wonderful attitude of Prahlada, Narasimhadev tempted him with benedictions. And in Mahaprakash Leela, so many devotees are there. And Mahaprabhu says, ask something, ask a benediction, take a benediction. All these devotees are asking for pure devotional service only. To reveal their glorious aspirations to the entire world, Lord will tempt such people with their benedictions. Sometimes Lord will test such people with calamities. And depending on the response, their response towards that calamities, we will understand how glorious they are. So that is why Krishna tests some devotees. Lord Sri Krishna put to test many of his pure devotees just to magnify their sense of duty. For example, Arjuna was possessor of dharma. Krishna tested him by his Veera and Raudra, by invoking Veera Rasa and Raudra Rasa in him, by giving all these arguments. And gopis are possessors of prema. And Krishna tested them by giving them instructions on karma and jnana. Now he played flute and called all of them in the middle of the night, and he started giving some karma yoga. He started giving instructions, moral instructions. Hey, you are all women, how can you come in the middle of the night to meet another boy in the forest? Your husbands are waiting, your children are waiting, your relatives are waiting, your brothers are waiting. How can you leave all of them and come here? Krishna is apparently saying that, but he didn't mean it. Krishna never wanted them to go. And this gopis apparently did not follow Krishna, but actually they followed the mood of Krishna. They did not follow the word of Krishna, they followed the mood of Krishna. They stayed there. Patisutanvayat bhratrubandhavat ativilanghyate achyutagata gativirastavo udgita mohitaha kitavayoshitaha kastyajenishi. You just called with your flute and we left everything, patisuta bhratrubandhava, and now you are saying in the middle of the night, go back. What kind of moral instructions you are giving? We are beyond this karma yoga business. So let's engage in intimate pastimes. Then later Krishna had sent a love letter to the gopis through Uddhava. After he went from Vrindavan, he had sent, in 10th canto 47 chapter, you can see Bhramara Gita. There Uddhava brings a message of Krishna. There Krishna teaches them Jnana Yoga. Don't think that we are separated. You are there and I am here. Apparently so much of Jnana and Sankhya comes there, in that all material elements will come. But inside that there is a message, I am going to come back. And gopis would say that Krishna, don't give this argument that you left us just to increase our longing for you. We have such a longing for you that we will die in a moment only in your separation. And what will you accomplish by increasing our longing? We will only lose our lives. Don't give this argument. And when Uddhava said this verse, gopis said that, keep that letter with you only and give this to Mathura woman. Krishna will very soon leave them also. Then you will speak this to them. Give this letter to such Mathura ladies. They will accept it. We cannot accept this. These are very low things for us. Then Krishna revealed his actual intention. I am actually going to come back. And this time it is final. I will never leave you. Then they are pacified. And all these are not mentioned literally in the letter. They are intentions, deeper intentions of Krishna, which acharyas bring out. And gopis, when they got it, then they were pacified. So apparently Krishna wanted to give them karma and jnana instructions, although they are in prema. So they acted against Krishna's apparent words. And here apparently Krishna told Arjuna, you kill Ashwatthama, but he did not wanted him to kill. Because Krishna wanted Arjuna to glorify, Krishna wanted to glorify Arjuna to such an extent, but after few verses, Arjuna will kill Ashwatthama and he would not kill Ashwatthama also. That greater intelligence of Ashwatthama, Krishna will not, sorry, greater intelligence of Arjuna will not be brought out if Arjuna had killed Ashwatthama now only. So actually Krishna did not want him to kill. All the five strong arguments are given. Next, Krishna also gave instructions to Prithu Maharaj also, take some benediction. He said, I want devotional service only. What benediction I want? I want to serve you. I want thousands, millions of years so that I can hear your katha. Not only the Lord tests his pure devotees, Lord's pure devotees, Siddha devotees, test other devotees also. For example, Sukadeva Goswami tested Parikshit Maharaj in the 6th canto. Parikshit Maharaj asked, how can all these people be saved from hellish conditions? Then Sukadeva Goswami said, they can perform atonement before they die. Then they will be saved. Then Arjuna said, atonement is like elephant bath. Elephant will take bath and throws mud on it. So that is as good as not taking bath only. Someone may commit atonement, someone may perform atonement, again he will commit sinful activities. So I cannot accept this answer. So Guru is saying, and how can you reject Guru's statement? So devotees are not just sentimental, just carried away by that. They can understand what my Guru means, what the Lord actually meant. Apparently he may say this, I can't take it literally. He means something else behind these words also. So Parikshit Maharaj just rejected. Then again, Sukadeva Goswami proposed another, Jnanakanda. Then Arjuna, Parikshit Maharaj did not say a single word, just with his expressions, Sukadeva Goswami understood. I think my disciple was not satisfied with this answer. Then he gave the final thing, Kechit Kevalaya Bhaktya Vasudeva Parayanaha. All this he gave. So like that, Sukadeva Goswami also tested Parikshit Maharaj. And at the end of 9th canto, Sukadeva Goswami just summarizes Krishna's glories in one or two verses. And just, okay. You just finished 10th canto in just two verses. I want to hear 90 chapters, not one or two verses. Please elaborate more. Then he started from first chapter of 10th canto. So, Sukadeva Goswami tested Parikshit Maharaj's Shastric understanding, Siddhantic understanding in the 6th canto. He tested his eagerness to hear elaborately about Krishna in the 9th canto. And in the 12th canto, when Parikshit Maharaj was about to depart, right? The Takshak bird will come just in few minutes and Parikshit Maharaj is about to go back to Godhead. Then he tested. Sukadeva Goswami tested Parikshit Maharaj by giving him Jnana Yoga. Throughout the 12 cantos, he glorified Bhakti Yoga and the final conclusion of Bhagavatam, he gave Jnana. Then Parikshit Maharaj said, why are you giving this Jnana? Do you think I will get confused? I am your disciple. I will not be bewildered by this Jnana. I will leave my body in a devotional way only. Then he meditated on Krishna and left his body. Like that, devotees also test other devotees. One needs to understand. Next, 41, please read.
After reaching his own camp, Arjuna, along with his dear friend and charioteer Shri Krishna, entrusted the murderer unto the dear wife, who was lamenting for her murdered sons.
Next.
Shri Suta Goswami said, Draupadi then saw Ashwatthama, who was bound with ropes like an animal and silent for having enacted the most inglorious murder. Due to her female nature and due to her being naturally good and well behaved, she showed him due respects as Vama.
So Vama Swabhava. So Draupadi, when she saw Ashwatthama bound by ropes like that, a compassionate feeling arose in her heart. She could not tolerate. So far she could not tolerate the grief of the death of her sons. Now as soon as she saw this Ashwatthama being bound by ropes like that, like an animal, she could not tolerate that pain also. So compassion upon Ashwatthama. So Prabhupada explains about discriminatory power of Draupadi. So Draupadi, her sons were killed and she is ready to forgive Ashwatthama. On the other hand, Gandhari, when her sons were killed, she cursed Krishna. You are the cause of the death of all my sons. I curse you that your entire dynasty will be annihilated. So, Draupadi is a Vaishnavi. She was immediately willing to forgive the killer of her sons. And her glorious character will come in future. Next few verses. So, Vama Swabhava, Prabhupada writes, a good man or a woman accepts anything very easily, but a man of average intelligence does not do so. But anyway, we should not give up our reason and discriminatory power just to be gentle. She was being gentle. Prabhupada says that one should not lose one's discriminatory power by in the name of being gentle. One must have good discriminatory power to judge a thing on its merit. We should not follow the mild nature of a woman and therefore accept what is not genuine. Ashwatthama may be respected by a good-natured woman, but that does not mean that he is as good as a genuine Brahmana. So while dealing with cunning people, one has to be cunning. While dealing with a murderer, one has to deal with punishment. So a great soul's forgiveness like this will not make a heinous act of a murderer proper act. Just because Draupadi forgave, what Ashwatthama did not become correct. What he did is a heinous act only. It is her glory that she forgave Ashwatthama. But that doesn't approve Ashwatthama's act. So when Prabhupada is bringing out this aspect also. Now, Vasudev is very shrewd, very intelligent, very smart in predicting that so many calamities are going to come in Vrindavan. My dear Nanda Maharaj, go and protect your sons. And Nanda Maharaj, in the 10th canto, 6th chapter, he went and predicted, he saw Putana's dead body there, and he said, hey, Vasudev became a sage. That he developed mystic powers. He predicted what's going to happen in Vrindavan. So there, Nanda Maharaj's simplicity was highlighted. Here, Vasudev being a Kshatriya, he knows the political situation there, his smartness is highlighted. So some devotees are mild in nature like Draupadi. Some devotees are very assertive and strict in nature like Bhima. We'll see in after few verses. So whatever may be, devotee's intention is always to give pleasure to Krishna. So Vasudev and Nanda Maharaj, both are very wonderful devotees. Their intention is, they are absorbed in thought of Krishna. Similarly, Draupadi and Bhima, both of them were devotees. They were absorbed in thought of Krishna, yet they were having a different opinion. So how to deal in a situation? Different people may hold different kinds of opinions, but ultimately they agree to the fact that Krishna is Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna is our protector. So there is no difference of opinion in the Siddhanta. There could be difference of opinion in how to deal a situation. So depending on one's flavor, one may be more on the liberal side, one may be more on the conservative side. So different flavors of Vaishnavas may be there. You will see more. She could not tolerate Ashwatthama's being bound by ropes. And being a devoted lady, she said, release him, for he is a Brahman, our spiritual master. This is 43rd verse. So she is using this dharma. Draupadi's speech in the next 6 verses, that has 6 qualities. 43rd verse reflects her quality of being dharmyam. Religious. She is very religious. She said, he is a Brahmana's son. Release. Now, a teacher or a spiritual master is liable to be rejected if he proves himself unworthy of a position of a guru or spiritual master. So, Ashwatthama failed to discharge the duties of a Brahmana or a teacher, so he can be killed. But here, still, although he lost his Brahminical position, still Draupadi is considering him a Brahmana and respecting him. So, being a good lady like Draupadi, the matter was considered not out of angle of Shastric vision, but as a matter of custom. Now you see, Prabhupada is giving this angle. According to custom, he is the son of a Brahmana, he deserves respect. That's what she is highlighting. But according to Shastra, because he did not exhibit the qualities of a Brahmana, he is not a Brahmana. He can be killed. Right? So there are two angles to it. So Draupadi, because of her compassion and mild nature, she took the other angle, not this angle. Now, it is sentimental. She is giving more importance to customs and sentiments than being Shastrik. Factually, the matter is different. A Brahmana is accepted on the merit of qualification and not on the merit simply of being a Brahmana son. Now, the Vaishnava angle of looking at it is, Prabhupada writes in the last sentence of the purport, a devotee of the Lord can tolerate all sorts of tribulation personally, but still such devotees are never unkind to others, even to the enemy. That is another angle, devotee's angle, compassion of a pure devotee versus protocols of this world. According, if you see, consider the protocols of just apply your left brain logic, then Aswatthama has to be killed. But if you see the compassion of a pure devotee like Aswatthama, not Aswatthama, Draupadi, then he should not be killed. Next, 44th verse. It was by Dronacharya's mercy that you have learned the military art of throwing arrows and the confidential art of controlling weapons. Now, she is giving Nyaya, justice. First is Dharma, he is a Brahman. Second is Nyaya, justice. What is that? If Dronacharya had not taught you this military art, today you would not have bound Aswatthama by using that military art. How can you engage the knowledge given by your guru to capture his own sin and punish him? Nyaya. She is giving that. Another argument. Next. And how can Dronacharya become a teacher of military art? Brahmana has to become some teacher of some knowledge. Right? It could be military art, it could be something, some other art. But he has to become teacher. Prabhupada says that. Next, 45th verse. He is certainly still existing. Dronacharya is still existing. Being represented by his son, his wife Kripi did not undergo a sati with him because he had a son. So generally in those Vedic days, wife would undergo sati when the husband dies. But if the child is alive, wife may not do it. Because the child is a representative of that husband. So she continues to live depending on the son. So he is representing Dronacharya. So Dronacharya is still alive. So you should not kill. So this is another argument called Sakarunam, merciful. Next, 46th verse. O most fortunate one who knows the principles of religion, it is not good for you to cause grief to glorious family members who are always respectable and worshipful. Right. So this is nirvyalikam, non-duplicitous. So she was not duplicitous. The respectable family members are there. How can you cause any disturbance to them? Right? If you apparently they are respectable and then you disrespect them, that is duplicity. She was non-duplicitous. Nirvyalikam. 47th verse. My Lord, do not make the wife of Dronacharya cry like me. I am aggrieved at the death of my sons. She need not cry constantly like me. Now, she is equal, samam. Means, more than being overwhelmed by the feeling that he troubled me, he has to be troubled. She was overwhelmed by the feeling, womanly, motherly feelings that I am a mother, I am experiencing the pain of son's death, and she is also a mother. How can I give that same pain to her by killing her son? She is seeing samam between her and Kripi. Motherly feelings and respectable position held by wife of Dronacharya. She is seeing both. Then 48th verse. If the kingly order, being unrestricted in sense control, offends the Brahmana order and enrages them, then the fire of that rage burns up the whole body of the royal family, brings grief upon all. This is Mahat, glorious. To think like that, to the Brahmana's wrath, the displeasure of this Brahmanical order will cause some problem to our entire Kshatriya order. She is seeing a bigger picture also. That is Mahat, glorious verse. Now we will read the 49th verse. Dharmyam nyayam sakarunam.
Dharmyam nyayam sakarunam.
Nirvyalikam samam mahat.
Nirvyalikam samam mahat.
Rajadharma suto rajnya.
Rajadharma suto rajnya.
Pratyanta vacho dvija.
Pratyanta vacho dvija.
So this verse only says dharmam. See the first two lines. Dharmyam nyayam sakarunam. Dharmyam nyayam sakarunam. Nirvyalikam samam mahat. all these six qualities are described in the 49th verse. Last six verses are the six words of this this verse. So Prabhupada explains whatever we have discussed so far in the purport, how her words are having all these qualities. So now Krishna expressed his opinions, his arguments. Draupadi expressed her opinions, her arguments, right? Two angles we have seen. Now, after hearing these arguments of Draupadi, some people changed their minds. Right? Let's see. Nakulaha sahadevascha yudhano dhananjayaha bhagavan devaki putro ye chanye yascha yoshitaha. Nakula and Sahadeva and Satyaki and Arjuna and Krishna and the ladies and others all unanimously agreed with the king. So, previous verse, Yudhishthira Maharaj approved the opinion of Draupadi. And all these other personalities in the 50th verse, they are approving the opinion of the king, Yudhishthira. So by presenting all these arguments, Draupadi gained so many followers for her, right? So many people agreed with her opinions. So even pure devotees also can have differences of opinion. But all of them simply want to please Krishna only, ultimately. So one may have difference of opinion with another Vaishnava, but that should not turn into hatred towards other Vaishnava. Your opinion is that, my opinion is this. You may hold on to your opinion also. But they should not fight because of this difference of opinion. Right? He's a Vaishnava, I am a Vaishnava, and I'm supposed to be a Vaishnava. Then I have respect for him as a Vaishnava, although he holds a different opinion. So now, another person, Bhima, he did not agree. That will come in the next verse. Bhima, however, disagreed with them and recommended killing the culprit who, in an angry mood, had murdered sleeping children for no purpose, for neither his nor his master's interest. Again, Bhima is like apparently agreeing with Krishna's instructions earlier. Krishna's arguments. So he brought out another issue. For no one's benefit he killed. How can you show mercy on him? Dharmam, Nyayam, all these arguments will not apply to that fellow. So, Krishna is allowing everyone to speak. Now, Krishna has better intelligence than all these people. Still, he would stand there and allow Draupadi to speak six verses. And Yudhishthira Maharaj to speak one verse or whatever. And all the other people to speak one verse each are at least to agreement. Yes, 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 at least that much. And Bhima also spoke one verse. Right? So Krishna is patiently hearing all these instructions. It's one aspect of human psychology is there that even if I may not accept your opinion, I may not agree with you, I may not execute what you say, still I will be happy if you hear me. If you allow me to completely express myself. So Krishna is personally sitting there and hearing all the arguments of all these persons. And now he will reconcile and then give an instruction, a bewildering instruction to Arjuna. So one, the Vaishnavas have different opinions, as we have seen, in front of Krishna also. In front of Krishna, different Vaishnavas are disagreeing with each other. But they never disagree with each other on the lines, on the basic Siddhantic principles. Aradhya. Apparently you see, commentary of one Acharya is different from commentary of another Acharya. That has to be seen as variety. That has to be seen as different angle, different flavor. For example, some object is there, right? So somebody will see it from this angle, from that angle, from this angle. Somebody will highlight this, somebody will highlight that. Somebody will highlight this. What he sees is correct, what he sees is also correct. But he is seeing from this side, he is seeing from that side. Like that. One has to see things as variety and not as contradiction. So, all the Acharyas sometimes may give different opinions on one verse only. But all of them will agree to this fact that Aradhyo Bhagavan Vrajeshatanaya. Krishna is our worshipable Lord. Tad dhama Vrindavanam. Vrindavan is the highest abode. Ramya kachid upasana vajavadhu vargiyana vakalpita. Highest worship done to Krishna is done by gopis. Then Bhagavatam Purana Mamalam. Spotless Purana. Spotless authority is Bhagavatam. And Prema Pumartho Mahan. Ultimate goal of life is to develop love of God. These five basic principles, Acharyas will never disagree with each other. And some details, commentaries may be there. He is saying this, he is saying that. So, similarly, Vaishnavas also. If there is a Siddhantic deviation, like somebody may say, Krishna is not Supreme Personality of Godhead. Ayyappa is Supreme Personality of Godhead. If someone says that, then we should not agree. Both of them agree with Krishna, but Krishna is this, Krishna is that. People may describe him in a different way, in a Vaishnava way. That's a different thing. Like that, somebody may say, Bhakti Yoga is not the supreme. Some other yoga may be supreme. So that we cannot accept. So basically, a egoistic person, someone who has lot of ahankar, he cannot accept anyone's opinion. He wants to control his seniors, control his juniors, control his equals, control even guru, control even the Lord. Everybody has to hear my opinion. I cannot hear anyone's opinion. So such people are little difficult to handle. But there are people, they may have their opinion, they may hear others' opinion also. Whatever is practical, they will do the needful and then things will move ahead. Like that. But here also different opinions are seen about the same thing. Now let's see. Because Bhima is disagreeing, so Bhima is overwhelmed with compassion. Not Bhima. Draupadi is overwhelmed with compassion. And Bhima is saying, angry, kill him. So to stop Bhima and to stop Draupadi, Krishna manifested four hands. With two hands he is stopping Draupadi, with two hands he is stopping Bhima. Like that. And he is instructing Arjuna with his mouth. Let's see what will happen. Chaturbhuja. 52nd verse, that's why it's called Chaturbhuja. Suddenly he manifested two extra hands. Chaturbhuja. Because three parties are not there, he did not become Shadbhuja. Only two parties. So after hearing the words of Bhima, Draupadi and others, saw the face of his dear friend Arjuna and he began to speak as if smiling. Why Krishna is smiling? Smiling at his dear friend Arjuna. I will test your intelligence today, Arjun. Be ready. He didn't laugh, he just smiled. Let's see what he says. Sri Bhagavan Vacha. I will not read the verse. A friend of Brahmana is not to be killed. But if he is an aggressor, he must be killed. Two things. All these rulings are there in scriptures and you should act accordingly. You have to fulfill your promise to your wife and you must also act, you must also satisfy Bhima also. Just then Arjuna could understand the motive of the Lord. See, he has, this is Krishna saying, he says kill. No Brahmana should be killed, but Manu says aggressor can be killed. Although he is a Brahmana. So he recommended killing Krishna. And next statement is he recommended don't kill. Aswatthama is still considered a Brahmana because you killed Dronacharya. He is a Brahman. But he was with weapons standing on the battlefield, that's why you killed. But this Aswatthama, this is not battlefield, he is not standing with any weapons. How can you kill him? So you should not kill. That's another argument Krishna gives. And you promised Draupadi that you will bring the head of Aswatthama. And now Draupadi is saying don't kill. And Bhima is saying kill. So many kinds of arguments he presented in front. Do the needful. And please me. And please them. They are my devotees. So like that, he presented such a bewildering situation in front of Arjuna. Let's see how Arjuna reconciles all this. So, just then Arjuna could understand the motive of the Lord by his equivocal orders. And thus with his sword, he severed both hair and jewel from the head of Aswatthama. So, he severed both hair and jewel. That is as good as killing. So, he, means Aswatthama, had already lost his bodily luster due to infanticide, killing children. And now, moreover, having lost the jewel from his head, he lost even more strength. Thus he was unbound and driven out of the camp. Cutting the hair from the head and depriving him of wealth, driving him from his residence are prescribed punishment for a Brahma Bandhu. But killing is not prescribed punishment. Arjuna is aware of all this. So one should be well versed with the intentions of the instruction giver. One should be well versed with the conclusions of Shastras. Then he will be able to take an intelligent decision in terms of this kind of contradictory situation. Now he will tell Draupadi, I have not killed. Draupadi is happy. He will tell Bhima, I have killed. Have you not seen? Bhima is also satisfied. So both parties are satisfied. It's as good as killing and not killing. For example, once there was a big battle as a part of Kurukshetra only, and Karna was defeating this Yudhishthira Maharaj, and Yudhishthira Maharaj came back. Then after some time, he came, Arjuna came. Then Yudhishthira Maharaj says that you have not killed Karna. What are you handling that bow, Gandiva? Give up that Gandiva bow. He said like that. Then whoever says that give up this Gandiva bow, I will kill him. That was Arjuna's vow. Arjuna was about to kill Yudhishthira Maharaj. Then Krishna says, what are you doing? How can you kill Yudhishthira Maharaj? Then for what purpose are you fighting? Then he told like this is my vow. Then Krishna said, blaspheming a person like this is as good as killing him. So you start blaspheming Yudhishthira Maharaj. Then Arjuna starts blaspheming Yudhishthira. Then hearing that blasphemy, Yudhishthira becomes so, I am so bad or what? Then he said, I will commit suicide. Then Krishna suggested some other solution. So like that, Krishna, you know, manages the situation in such a way that whatever are the apparent social customs or protocols, they are satisfied. At the same time, the ultimate highest interest is also protected. Like that. So now I will conclude with one small story of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There also one kind of situation has happened. In Antilila it is described. Gopinath Patnaik is a great devotee and he misappropriated government's money and he was seeing some dancing girls, right? Then he was arrested by the king and king's son, prince, he was putting him on the changa to kill him. Then people came and reported to Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu said, how can he misappropriate the money of government and I am a sannyasi, how can I go on the behalf of a criminal and then spread my cloth and beg in front of the king that please give me the life of this devotee, he is my devotee, how can I say like that, why are you involving me in this political affairs, I am a sannyasi, I have nothing to do with this political affairs, Mahaprabhu was saying like that. So you know the whole pastime, most of you are aware of this pastime, right?
Yes.
So at the end of this chapter, Gopinath Patnaik was somehow saved. So Kashi Mishra intruded and then he spoke to the king Pratap Rudra and then somehow situation was rectified and Gopinath Patnaik was saved and all the devotees, Gopinath Patnaik's family, Ramanandra and all of them came in front of Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu gave them good instructions and Gopinath Patnaik's salary was doubled. He was given some puraskar. So many things has happened. Then in this whole episode, if you actually see Mahaprabhu, he strictly followed the conduct of a sannyasi and he never gave up his compassion as a Supreme Lord. He never supported the wrong social behavior of a devotee. So apparently Mahaprabhu was never involved in this whole affair, but Gopinath Patnaik was saved. And because of his influence and because of his mercy, because of the fact that he is informed about the calamity of a devotee, the devotee was saved and protected and he was given a better position also. So at heart, as the Supreme Lord, Mahaprabhu never gave up his compassion towards his devotee. That feeling of compassion protected Gopinath Patnaik. At the same time, Mahaprabhu never approved the social misbehavior of his devotee. You may be my devotee, but don't think that you will be forgiven according to the social customs in the name of being a devotee. See, he never approved. So Mahaprabhu managed the whole situation without his name coming out. You see? So there are ways of resolving this kind of contradictory situations and there are examples of so many devotees, directly the Supreme Lord, Krishna, Mahaprabhu and so many devotees who are managing the situations nicely. Right? So there are solutions, but it's up to one's intuition and connection with Krishna and the sincerity with which he serves Krishna and Guru. Based on that, he will get intelligence to solve this kind of apparently completely contradictory situations. Right? Krishna gives that intelligence. Many situations are different, circumstances are different. Different situations seem bewildering in different ways. But devotee gets the intelligence to resolve. Sometimes devotee may even wonder that, did I resolve it this way? I am only wondering. Where did that intelligence come from? Krishna gave that intelligence to solve it in such a way. So like that, Arjuna was given intelligence by Krishna in this. And so many other insights of this chapter are there. So we have crossed the time. So we learn Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam.